This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared. And remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They're the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba DaVinci.
Morning. This is Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Bubba DaVinci and Colorado Ron. He's a little tired this morning. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? Even in the hey-hey. Even
morning.
In the hey-hey. So, how you doing this morning, Colorado?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing good.
Yeah.
Trying to be as energetic as you.
Oh, come on. That'll never happen. So, Backwoods Home Magazine presents Self-Reliance Expo every Saturday morning from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, which is way too early for Colorado Ron. But we do it. We do it because we like to make sure we bring you valuable information, or at least what we think is valuable information. Every week, things from our partners at Backwoods Home Magazine. We try to bring that stuff out to you and introduce you to them. The writers that write all that great information, and talking to the vendors that are out there who support Backwoods Home Magazine and Self-Reliance Expo. So thank you very much for joining us. So it's been a very, very interesting week for us, hasn't it, Colorado?
Yeah, you can say that.
and we will completely get into it, but I'm going to tease it a little bit. Colorado Ron and I think we told you guys last Saturday, we were going out to Dallas, Texas to meet with some people from some of Glenn Beck's organizations, to talk about our Dallas Expo. And we'll go over that later on in the third hour. But we arrived, and, you know, we kind of did some running around. And then, you know, the next day we started our meetings and we went to the venue where we were going to be setting up and walked around. And what happens? We get hit with not one, not two, but three tornadoes in Dallas, Texas. And it was a nutty experience, wasn't it, Colorado?
By the time it was all said and done, there was actually a dozen, they said.
A dozen, really? Wow, see, I didn't
follow. Yeah, that's what they said.
It was the nuttiest weather. And coming from Texas, you know, we get nutty weather all the time. But I had never seen anything like this. It was just, and we were near, it was like the tornadoes were following us. You know, we were at Arlington Park first, and then a big one went through there. And then we went to Irving, and then we had one follow us there. Then we went to Glenn Beck Studios, and then we had one go near there. And then we had to try to drive to the airport and went through with it. And granted, Colorado Ron told me not to do it, but I decided to do it anyway. And we just went through or missed a hailstorm in which he got a great photograph of a bunch of cars with busted out windows from the hail.
Yeah.
Hitting everything. So anyway, was a nutty week. And because of that, there were some switches, and I want to kind of let you guys know who we have on air today. This morning, we have Amy Alton, who is Nurse Amy from the Doom and Bloom, Doc Bones and Nurse Amy. And we'll be talking to her about what she's going to be covering at our expo and some of the stuff she does. And our second guest is was supposed to be Masad Ayu. And unfortunately, and I know you're probably crushed about this, Ron, is...
Yeah, he's awesome. I like talking to him about guns and ammo and stuff. But unfortunately, he had a class he had to teach, wasn't it? So unfortunately, he wasn't going to be able to be here, and so we decided to figure out what we could do about that, and so we talked with Backwoods Home Magazine, and we got the great Charles Sanders to come on. So he'll be on in our second hour, and that's a great one because you know, he lives down in Indiana, and they do a lot of beef cattle and gardening and, you know, basic homesteading stuff. So we'll be able to pick his brain about that as well. So
I'm back.
We're
here,
pretty
Colorado.
Excited about that. Okay.
Thanks for picking up. Yeah, that's the first time it's happened. We are in the middle of having a bunch of major thunderstorms going through here, and we'll see if it happens again. Hopefully it won't. But did you? I didn't get a chance to hear. Did you let them know that the reason why Masad was not able to join us?
Yes, I told him about Masad, and then I also told him about our second hour Charles Sanders guest.
Okay, wonderful. So, we should be having, like I said, a very interesting show that pops up here because we're freelancing it. And the reason we're freelancing it is because of that tornado, neither one of us got home. Well, I got home I was home by middle of the week. Colorado Ron just got home yesterday.
I got home Thursday night, just in time for my son's first track meeting. So it was crazy. I went straight from the airport, straight over there. Then I had to volunteer at church Thursday night, so I went straight from that track meeting over to the church. And by the time I got home, yeah, it was like 9 o'clock. So
Well, so we got back safe, which was the important thing. And you know, we did it not because of our families. We did it for you, the audience. Yeah, because we knew we had to be here to do the show. I know probably both our wives are cringing right now, going, yeah, that's probably true. But that's the way it is. Okay. So let's go ahead and just so you guys know, apparently it looks like Skype and Blog Talk are kind of acting up today, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but we'll continue to go ahead and get through this. This is the problem with technology, and this is the reason you need to be prepared, because, you know, what are you going to do when there is no more Skype? Yeah, we need to start. You know what we need to do? we need to start our blog, our Backwoods Home Magazine Self-Reliance Exposed Self-Reliance Network, in which we get everybody, we have everybody that listens to us get a tin can and a bunch of string. And what happens is when Skype goes down, we can all stretch them real tight and everybody can put it to their ear and we can continue to do our show. Because that's about the quality of Skype when it goes haywire. Which is, it sounds like you're probably listening to us through a tin can. But anyway, that's enough because Skype is probably going to turn us both off now for mocking them. And let's go ahead and go to our first commercial break, and then we'll bring Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, on and see what she's up to. So we'll talk to you guys in 5. Or maybe not.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with 2 black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes 6 number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our 1 year plus meat eaters units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Beckwith Homes Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. Hopefully this is a better 45 minutes without the issues with Skype. We have with us Amy Alton, also known as Nurse Amy from the Doom and Bloom show, that's actually hosted here every week. Welcome. Good morning, Amy.
Hi, guys. How are you? Speaking of Skype issues, about 5 minutes ago, I was listening to you guys before the commercials, and it suddenly went silent. So if you guys lose me, make sure you Skype me, because I won't know. But, yeah, it's all crazy today.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's just Skype having problems or if it's, you know, a combination of things. But yeah, it has been kind of kinky all day.
Maybe Skype's not a morning person either.
Haven't had their coffee either.
That's right. Well, it is kind of funny. I was thinking about this when I sent Amy a email asking her to be on the show. Is Amy is a late night person. And I was like, wow, I'm going to have Colorado Ron and Nurse Amy on early in the morning. Boy, is this going to be a fun conversation.
Wait, hold on. Joe, where's my coffee?
That's Nurse Amy yelling for her husband, Dr. Bone, who is actually right now setting up the IV so we can get the coffee injected directly into Nurse Amy.
Absolutely. I'm not going for the light, clear coffee today. I want that dark, grainy stuff that you almost have to chew.
There you go.
I want to chew my coffee. Anyway, good morning, fellows. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for coming on to our show.
I'm just glad you guys are alive. I was freaking out when I saw that. I'm serious. I'm standing in front of the television, I have to tell this. And, there's, news flash and emergency and blah, blah, blah. And I hear Dallas, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. Colorado Ron and Bubba are right there. And then they're showing the map, and they're like, oh, and here's the airport. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, you're supposed to fly out today. Holy moly. And that's when I started brainstorming. Sending you guys text messages. Are you okay? Where are you? The airport's closed. I mean, I don't know how many text messages I sent you, but I was really freaking out, and I'm so glad that you guys are okay. I was very worried.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, it was funny. When she called me, we actually got on the phone for a few seconds. It was hard to talk. Colorado Ron and I were standing outside watching the clouds above us start to swirl in circles, and the wind start whipping, and then the rain just starts coming down, and then I lost you. And then the next text message I get is, are you okay? I lost you.
Talk about making a nurse panic, okay? I'm freaking out because you've just been carried away by some tornado, and you're now swirling helplessly into the clouds of death.
Okay, first of all, Amy, we've known each other for a little over a year now, and you've personally seen both Colorado Ron and I, and neither one of us, I think, would have a problem being lifted up and carried away with a tornado. So
no,
that's not an issue. Did you see our food travel plan for the last when we met with you last time? Come on.
No, I know why you guys travel, because you want to see what restaurants are available. That's why you guys travel.
That's right.
But listen, seriously, just before that, I was seeing Mack trucks, on the television, huge trailers being lifted up, flipped upside down, and smashed to the ground like they're little tinker toys. So
I was just down the street from us, actually.
I know. Okay. I still have that panic in my voice. This is how I was during the thing. I was freaking out, screaming at Joe, oh, my God, I hope they're okay. All right. Well, I was very worried. I'm very happy you guys are safe. But next time there's a tornado, maybe you shouldn't walk outside and look at it being formed.
Well, it's that's true, too. But, it's kind of funny. Colorado Ron and I were talking about it, and it was like, these are the situations why we all got into this business, right? I don't think probably 80% of Dallas was prepared for what happened. And everybody was freaking out, and there was power outages and everything else. And, most of those people never suspected that they could ever have something like that happen. And that's why being a prepper is important, which is it's not trying to, plan for a certain event. It's trying to plan for all events.
You're right. You just never know. I mean, Mother Nature can exact a wrath upon anyone on this earth for any reason, and you just don't know. I mean, did Manhattan think they were going to get a hurricane last year? I doubt it. Were they prepared?
Right.
Absolutely not. All that flooding, that crazy wildfires. I mean, again, like you said, Bubba, you just never know. And so you should be prepared with all of your supplies, no matter what happens.
Yeah, so, I definitely agree.
Well, that's a perfect segue, actually, into some of your background, because what's amazing about what happened in Dallas was nobody was killed. At least the last report I heard, that they haven't found anybody that had been killed, even though those tornadoes were pretty devastating. But They did not, just because nobody was killed, they didn't talk about how many people were injured. There were still lots of people that got injured. And there was lots of neighborhoods where, people still could not get, the police didn't get in there in a timely manner. Well, they did the best they could, but, it's still, when you're hurt, you know, it takes a while. You know, every second seems like 10 minutes. So, you know, those are some of the things that we're talking about today. And, you know, and Nurse Amy, you know, obviously from the Doom and Bloom, she's, you know, one of the things that people don't realize is you were actually a practicing nurse. So I'd like to know a little bit more about your background and then segue into some of this medical stuff.
Absolutely. I'm actually not, I just want to say that I'm not practicing, because I will tell you that I'm practicing nursing every day with consultations, mostly. We answer a lot of questions, and we welcome it. We're really happy to. So sort of a practicing nurse in prepping medical consultations. But I began my nursing career. I was sort of split between computer technology, or back then it was computer programming, or nursing. And my mom was very sick. She did actually pass on the night before I started nursing school. But she had met a lot of nurses, and she really encouraged me. And I, you know, I kind of felt a responsibility to sort of honor what my mother's wishes were. So I said, you know what, nursing sounds great. And I totally got into it. I applied to a all-women Catholic nun run, and I mean nun by nuns with hats, and they are real nuns, serious nuns, and applied to the school, and I got in, thankfully got some scholarships because it was not a cheap university, and went through 4 years, and when I did my rotation through obstetrics, I just loved it. Oh, my goodness. The baby, the mothers were happy, and I just felt very, very comfortable. So I almost knew immediately that in the future, somehow, I was going to be involved in that kind of nursing. So I graduated, and I started searching around. My first job, very luckily, was a labor and delivery position, which everyone told me, you know, you have to work on the regular floors for at least 2 years before they'll accept you into a specialty area, because you have to, you know, sort of, you know, go through the grunt work before you get to do the special stuff. But I begged this nurse manager, please, 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 this is all I want to do. So she gave me a chance, and it was just the most wonderful thing. I loved going to work every day, and I, again, started searching, how can I be part of delivering babies? You know, what's some other options? I thought about going to medical school several times during nursing school, but it just seemed like so many years. Of course, being older now, I realize that time goes by very quickly, and perhaps I should have done that. But anyway, I found out about certified nurse midwives. We luckily had a program. There are only 16 in the country. In fact, the one that I went to now no longer exists, but it was University of Miami, and they had a master's degree. And so I applied. And again, they said, well, you have to have at least 2 years' experience. No, 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 please, please, please. So starting there about 18 months after I graduated from my bachelor's degree, in between had a couple kids, and finished school a year late because Andrew came through and knocked out all of Miami and where we were supposed to do our practicum. So there weren't a lot of places for us to go to. I know. It was like, oh, their writing was on the wall that I was going to become a preparedness nurse. You know, these emergency situations affected my life seriously. So I had to take a year off and then go back to school. But so anyway, I have a master's degree from the University of Miami in nursing and science. And it's a dual license that I have. It's a certified nurse midwife and an advanced registered nurse practitioner, which means in Florida that I was able to write prescriptions and see patients by myself in the office for their visits and deliver their babies in the hospital without a doctor standing over me. So it was a very independent thing to do. And it gave me just so much satisfaction. So
that's awesome. Well, and I just wanted to let you know I've been having problems sleeping, so a prescription for Ambien would be in the mail would be fantastic.
Yeah. You so. Are a bad, bad boy.
I know. At least I didn't ask for
I'm going to tell you what I tell everybody who asks me for prescription medication. go see your doctor.
Well, you know something, it could have been I could have been asking for Viagra, but this is a PG show, so we won't go there.
Actually, I might feel more sorry for you then.
So, speaking of those little blue pills, now here's my ability to segue is, you know, both people in prepping, you know, it's kind of funny. You watch the local news and, you know, everybody's into prepping, doomsday preppers and everything else. And they try to present prepping and, you know, people in the self-reliant field and everything else as, you know, I'm going to use a bunch of different, you know, terms, but, you know, it's, they say, oh, look, they look like a bunch of hippies, or they're all blue collar. You know, these are people that don't have, you know, they're not professionals and everything else. And you're a medical professional. You know, you and Doc Bones, you know, Joe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, how did you guys segue into the self-reliance field? I mean, it, you know, people, I don't think you just kind of made a, you know, said, oh, well, we're always dealing with these emergencies, but I don't think people understand how a medical professional or a professional could potentially get into self-reliance. How did you guys get into the field?
Well, I personally grew up with a father who, although he didn't term himself self-reliant, had those behaviors. I mean, when we had I lived in Georgia for a part of my life. I was actually born on Eglin Air Force Base. My father was in the Air Force. He was taught mechanics, and then he went to work for Eastern. So we lived in Atlanta, which is the hub, and moved a lot, but we ended up for a while on 4 acres. So, and this was during the gas crises, like, I don't know, like 73-ish and 75, around those areas.
We're dating ourselves. I remember it too, but we're dating ourselves with saying that.
Yeah, it's okay. You know what? I'm as old as I am. And, you know, every year we get wiser, darn it. I am not going to, you know, I'm 46 and darn proud of it. Every one of those years, I learned something new.
I know she looks fantastic, doesn't she?
Oh, wow. I had no idea. No way.
Yeah. Oh, wait till you guys see me in Colorado Springs. I'm on a diet. Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. Great. So,
I'm going to disappear, hopefully.
So poor Joe's going to get pushed aside now, right? So you get up on stage and everybody else is...
That's right. I'm tired of being...
It'll be the Nurse Amy show.
There you go. I'm taking over. So the self-reliance that my father had, you know, he had the big storage barrel. I don't even know where he got this darn thing. It was so huge that he would have filled up with gas. So we would always have gas, and he would get it delivered, and somehow it was cheaper than if you went to the gas station. So he'd fill up the cars right from that barrel. We had a garden. We grew our own food. If we needed eggs, we knew chicken farmer, I should say. And boy, did that place stink. Holy moly, I remember that. But then they would also slaughter them for us. We'd go to meat markets where, you know, they'd have fresh slaughtered meat. So, you know, we did a lot of self-reliant things. He always had extra of everything. My mother canned, dehydrated. I mean, we did all of the things that I'm learning now to do. I wish I'd have paid more attention. But I didn't, so I have to relearn them. So anyway, I kind of grew up with that. And then you get into the city area. Now we're down in South Florida. In 76, we moved down here. And you lose those skills. Now you're used to going to the grocery store. Your mother doesn't teach you to can because she doesn't have a garden full of food that she just harvested that we needed to do it. So I don't learn any of those things. But we do have a few hurricanes. When Andrew came through and devastated Miami, and it was really bad. I think if there was less publicity on Andrew than there was on Katrina, but Andrew was pretty darn bad, I have to tell you. And so that hurricane was supposed to hit right over my house. I lived at the time on the border of Dade and Broward counties. It was supposed to come straight down the line. So we were prepared. We had all kinds of stuff. I thought I had enough stuff. But it hit south. We didn't have to use those things. And I just got to thinking, you know, seeing how bad it really was and how long those people had to survive for on their own without water and a lot of food being delivered, I thought, I'm just not prepared enough. So I started learning. So Andrew was in, 92, I believe. And since then, both Joe and I, Bones, just started learning more and more and more. And then we had the pandemic scares over the years. We had, you know, different types of flus. And Joe and I kind of looked at each other, Bones and I, and said, you know, we've got the hurricane supplies. You know, we did think longer term for that. But gosh, if there's a pandemic, I think that was the real light bulb for us. This could really devastate millions and millions of people. People who might be working at the, you know, electric companies or the water companies or the truckers. And, you know, this could really shut down our society for a very long period of time. Plus, you won't want to leave your house because you don't want to get sick. And so knowing that the communications and the travel can occur so quickly on this, in the earth, we're not isolated anymore. We're a one world, really, for communications and travel. That was really the thing that we said, gosh, we got to start storing up. So we started storing up, and then the financial crisis sort of, it's like a dominoes. One domino falls, and then a couple more fall, and then a bigger domino falls, and then more fall in front of it. So the dominoes kept getting bigger, and the signals just became stronger. And we just found the prepping community. Somehow, a couple of years ago, stumbled into some forums, and we found APN, we found ANTS, and just started trying to connect with people and learning, buying so many books, because books are very important if we don't have electricity. But really gathering resources and learning what is appropriate preparations instead of just what we had thought was what we should supply a store. So really focusing on what people recommend, and the people who recommend it have done it and written about it, and it seems logical. And so, boy, did we go on a crazy mission to become as prepared as possible. And then, of course, because we're medical people, that was another natural thing for us to become curious about. And pretty much 8 to 10 hours a day, it's been nonstop for almost 2 years. We've been trying to learn about medical preparedness and teach others, because that's what we're about. And I'm sorry I've been going on and on.
This is the problem with having another show host get on the air with you as an interviewee as opposed to an interviewer, is she can do the whole show by herself.
She's like, Joe's not here to interrupt me. I'm going on.
No, I have to tell you guys that both of us have how do I say this? Strong type A personalities. And we're it's tough when you get us in a room and you ask a question that we both feel we can answer, because we look at each other like, okay, who's first? All right, now it's my turn.
No, let me tell you, we love it. You know, it's kind of funny, and I'm sure you guys have been doing this for a little longer than we have, actually quite a bit longer than we have. And, you know, one of the things you find is when you get a guest on like you or Joe or someone that's done stuff before, you let them go as long as they possibly can, because on the alternate weeks it's like pulling teeth trying to get anybody to give you more than 4-word answers. you know what I'm talking about? You get those guests and you're like, so how did you get into prepping? Just decided I needed to start storing stuff.
Oh, exactly.
And then all of a sudden, you've got long periods of dead space. And you're like,
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then when you have a co-host like Colorado Ron here that isn't a morning person and is actually sleeping on the other side, he says he mutes his mic, and that's the reason he didn't answer. But you know what's happening? His wife runs back into the room and goes, wake up, he's talking to you. Yeah.
Ron, I hope I provided you with a nice little nap there.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, exactly. that's why we, that's
why we keep the chat windows open, because then we can preface each other and say, hey, I just had to run to the restroom. Okay, we just said this. You know, okay, so what about that? How was that ham? No, I didn't mean ham. I meant ham radio. Just kidding. Now the entire listening audience knows the secrets of preparedness radio network. Anyway.
Oh, my gosh. Did I make you guys miss a commercial?
No. Our commercials are at the top of
Ron, you're going to get in trouble, Ron. Be careful.
As we like to tell people, when we send out our Facebook stuff and everything else, it's like, we say, grab a cup of something hot to drink and sit a spell, because this is just like a bunch of old people sitting on the porch just, talking.
And it should be that way. This should not be one of those, ooh, be scared, the sky is falling, blah, blah, blah. It should be normal conversation with normal people just sharing stuff that I happen to learn, and then people sharing stuff that they happen to learn with us, and just like that. We should all be on the porch, in our rocking chairs, with our coffee, just having this conversation. That's the way it should be. Calm, relax, have a good time, laugh a little bit, make some jokes. This is not scary. This is fun. I love this.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into the next question. You guys' doom and gloom show has seen some remarkable growth. And I was going to ask you, what you guys attribute that success to? Is that part of it, just sitting there and talking
success.
To your own
I, you know, Ron, it's funny. I feel every time I do this, like the first podcast we're doing or the first time I'm answering a question, I guess it has been a while. You can use the word success. Anyway, we do have a lot of people who listen, and I think that they're listening because Bones and I provide information without trying to scare the bejesus out of you, without trying to say, if you don't learn this, you're going to have something terrible happen. No, if you want to learn it, you come to us with an open mind. We'll relax you, because if you're all excited, you're not going to learn anything. I don't know if you remember in school, if you got all nervous for a test, your brain stopped working. So you got to relax people. You got to say, hey, everything's okay right now. I'm going to teach you something. You're going to learn something, and you're going to feel good about it. You're not going to learn it because you're scared to death. That's not a good learning environment. So we just try to keep it calm, have a good time. We laugh. We joke around. But that's just our natural personalities. We can't help it. But I think people, when you laugh and you tell things in a calm manner, it just sinks in better. And I think people want to hear messages from people who are calming and who are not trying to freak you out. I'm not saying you have to buy my book or you're going to die. That's crazy. You know what? Buy my book if you want. If you don't, that's fine too. I'm just here to help. No pressure. So, and we also, again, provide our bloom part is this is fun. Learning to garden, planting an herbal garden, you have some chamomile. And you say, I want to get a good night's sleep tonight. Let me go grab some of those chamomile out there and make some tea. And let me, if I'm feeling bad, let me grab some echinacea and make some tea, and I'll feel better. My immune system will be built. Planting these things and growing natural medicine is very peaceful. Gardening is very relaxing, unless you've got, crazy people, someone like Baba, I don't know, who says, like, acres. I don't know how peaceful it is for you, poor thing, but if you have a small herbal garden, it's very peaceful. So anyway, providing the message in a calm way.
Well, so that was actually an excellent segue. Again, I see this is the great thing once again about people that do this all the time is they end their answers
with things that actually naturally go into the, another question that makes it easy to go. So here's the next question.
Yes, sir.
In our introduction of you on our, when we sent it out on Facebook and everything else, mm-hmm. we kind of pointed out that you were a certified nurse, a midwife, an expert on herbal remedies and essential oils, mm-hmm. and one of the things that kind of flows into that, and you mentioned the essential oils and everything else, is you and Joe are master gardeners too.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So I want to get into that. But, about what it takes to be a master gardener and how you got. But the bigger question I have to have is, I'm like a super hyper type A personality that has to is running around doing 50 zillion things. And you guys work with me, so you know it's true. All the time I'm going like a million miles an hour. And you and Joe make me look like a three-toed sloth. How the hell can you guys work in master gardener, herbal specialist, you do your show – we'll talk about it later, but you wrote a book. You're flying around and doing speaking. You're a nurse. You're a doctor. You're a photographer. My God. I mean, talk about type A, I think there's a new classification for you and Joe. It's like triple A personality. It's like. How do you do it? I mean, how do you guys, don't do anything part way. It's just amazing.
No, and that is a serious problem because I can't do anything part way. When I got into the photography, just as a little side note, I totally went crazy. I started taking courses, three, four courses at a time, just getting all the equipment and constantly taking pictures. And I still do a lot of photography now, but I can't do it. I can't do anything halfway. When I built my herbal garden, most people would have built like a 4x8 raised bed, say. No. This is not what Amy does. Amy goes into her backyard, of which I'm not supposed to be building, by the way, because my HOA has in the past threatened to take anything. So I go to the backyard where everybody can see, and I build two huge herbal gardens with bricks. I take the bricks and I put them up instead of sideways so it's even deeper. And I make two 20 by 4, 20 feet, each of them. And this is the herbal garden I build. And I plant over 70 varieties of medicinal plants. 70! Okay, what is wrong with me? So now I've got these 70 plants. I say, I need to have plant identification for them. So for each and every one of them, I made cards, laminated cards that had the terms for them. There you go. I did their generic name, common name. Scientific names, I wrote their grow zone. I wrote if they were medicinal, culinary, aromatic, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote a big paragraph underneath that. And this is for each one of them. How to use them, what parts are used, what they're good for, and what to apply them, how to apply them. Do you drink it? Do you give them a how often do you use it? Each and every one of these medicinal herbs has a card. Then I buy the plant holders so I can hold the card and put the spikes in every single plant so they all have their little card holders, which are galvanized and huge.
Does Joe have to sedate you every night to get you to sleep?
No, you don't understand. He tells me I'm lazy. He says you never get anything done. I'm like, do you know what I have done already today? I said, what I think? I think both of us should take notes because every night he's telling me he did more stuff than I did.
and guys, I haven't been over their house, but I can testify it's true. I typically work in two different time zones, United States and Asia. And so I've got a lot of hours that I put in and different time zones. And I've gotten text messages and emails from these two pretty much all through it. And it's just funny. It's like I don't get it from anybody else, but it's, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. They don't think that I'll answer, but I'll get something saying, "Scott, we were thinking about this. Call us tomorrow." And then I'm like, "Okay, I'll just reply right now." So it's just it's amazing. And then all of a sudden we'll get on Skype together. Joe's in the background playing video games, and she's out there, you know, typing, getting her stuff ready for her show. It's just the funniest thing. So.
Oh yeah. No, every morning begins with our list of what we need to accomplish and more. In fact, we went to Costco and we bought a whiteboard, like the one in your picture, Scott.
Oh, yeah. You know something? You shouldn't have done, in the future, here's the Bubba method for people. I'm going to give everybody a Bubba method. Is whiteboards, what did you pay for your whiteboard, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea. I don't even know. Because, you know, they don't have stickers on them. So the only place you see the price is, like, really briefly above it. And then you finish shopping. I don't even remember what it said.
Right. Well, I mean, whiteboards are not inexpensive. I mean, they're, you know, most people, you know, go out there and say, oh, because they see the little ones. People are used to little ones. And, you know, I've got a 4x8 on my wall. You know, 4 foot by 8 foot. And... you know, a good 4x8 whiteboard, if they're on a frame, are about $500. And
No. This was just very little money. This one's like two by three. This is a small one compared to what you have. But, yeah, no, right. People can buy these reasonably at Costco if they want a smaller one.
Yeah, small ones are very inexpensive. But if you want a wall-size one, so here's my Bubba tip for the day. Do not go and buy a framed one. So an independent freestanding one that you can wheel around is about $500 to $700. One that you can mount on your wall or anywhere from $150 to $300, depending on what you get. I got mine. My whiteboard on my wall cost me $7.99. And actually, total out the door was probably like $15. And here's what you do: go to any Home Depot or Lowe's. Go to the bathroom section where they do showers and everything else, and they have laminated what's called a bath board for $7 for a 4x8 sheet. And basically, what it is, it is the laminated white board that you put inside your bathroom so the water doesn't get to your wood.
Oh,
and that's all a whiteboard is also, except for they put it on a sturdier material. So you can go buy those all day long for $7, $8. It's a 4x8 sheet. And then you go get whatever kind of trim you want, which, like I said, is why it's $12. And you can go and you can trim it out. But you just mount it to your wall. Or you can just carry them all over the place because it's a 4x8 sheet. So there's your Bubba tip for the day. Don't get a limb sucker. You can go spend $100-some-odd. Go to Home Depot or Lowe's. Buy bathroom board. Put it on your wall. 4x8 sheet. Greatest whiteboard you'll ever have.
Love it. What a great – see, these are pearls of wisdom. People need to be listening to your show. Listen how much money they just saved. You know how much freeze-dried food or alternative energy generators they can buy for that money? Well,
there
maybe
you go.
One generator, but a whole lot of food.
A whole lot of food, that's it. And the money that I saved, what happened did I do with the money that I saved? I put it in a tank of a chicken coop for 3 chickens.
Yeah, 10,000-pound chicken coop.
1,000-pound chicken coop.
Can I ask you a question? How many chickens do you have?
Three. I have chickens.
You have three chickens?
I have three. I built, you know, we have a an eight by eight two-story chicken coop. Look at it in the Facebook, people. That has now been painted. It has been now been painted. It's all been fenced in. It's got the cool little doors. I put windows on it, and I have three chickens. But you know something? I'm getting three eggs a day, so I'm happy. And it's been pretty cool so far. But we definitely overplanned for three chickens.
Oh, but those chickens are so happy. Think of the nice life they're gonna have.
Oh yeah, yeah. We should talk about the chicken thing later on because I mean we don't. We haven't done the chicken update so far, and Ron heard some of it as part of it, but we'll get to the chicken update later.
Sorry.
No.
But I have to tell you why I mentioned it because Bones and I have a 10-year wedding anniversary coming up on April 27th.
Congratulations.
And instead of taking me to our honeymoon destination, which was Paris, he told me he's going to get me a chicken.
Okay.
There goes, Dr. Bones. Awesome.
Way to keep the marriage alive.
This is what we have fallen into. Woohoo! No, but seriously, I love chickens, and I've wanted one for a long time. Although I can't say that it would be a super awesome 10-year wedding anniversary present. Hint, hint, Joe, who's not listening.
Well, you know what I think he did is he looked it up on Wikipedia, which, you know, is hardly ever accurate, and it probably said the 10-year anniversary is feathers.
Feathers!
And, you know, not gold, not platinum, not wood, it's feathers. And so he figured a chicken. So, I mean, Joe, I'm right there with you. And, buddy, if you're listening, I want to talk to you about getting some advice because, you know, if I could get my wife a chicken for her anniversary and still be alive at the end of it, you know, that's a whole new new prepping community right there.
This is how deep into preparedness we are that I would be willing and happy to have a chicken for our wedding anniversary. Oh, but they're so cute. Oh, we have baby ducks that are visiting us every day because, of course, we hear them chee, 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 chee. So we have to go feed them. So now we have a whole family of baby ducks that we're taking care of. But they're so cute when they're little.
So, I mean, we recommend red pullets, you know, good egg layers if you guys want it for egg. You know, I don't know any of the broiling species, although I don't see you plucking chickens in the back of your yard in Florida.
Nah, I just want one.
You don't think it'll
jump in the pool, do you? Because I was thinking about keeping it on my patio. You think it'll jump in the pool?
No. Chickens are... Actually, a lot smarter than I thought they were.
Okay.
So I don't think they're stepping the pool.
But I have heard of the red pull-up. Thank you. Yeah, they're supposed to be great egg layers.
Yeah, red star, which is what we got. And, man, these things are just nice, big, brown eggs. I mean, just gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous eggs.
Awesome. Everyone should have a chicken.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't even know where to go.
We've gone way off.
All right, you know what? Were we supposed to talk about my book? You asked me something, and I just like went far on a tangent.
You know something? It was my fault, and I took us down. You know something? Mad Mike, you're not on this week, but I'm sure you're listening. It was my turn to take him down a rabbit hole. I apologize, Maricopa. So, you know, I've now learned my lesson. Do not take people down rabbit holes because I don't know how to get back. Anyway.
Hey, I got you back, though. See? I brought you back.
Yep. Thank you. Go ahead, Ron.
All right. So you co-authored a book. Can you tell us a little bit more about that book?
Oh, The Doom and Bloom, Survival Medicine Handbook. Oh, talk about waking up every morning with a long list of things to do.
No kidding. I can't believe you guys got that done in the amount of time you did.
Oh, woof. Anyone thinking that writing a book is like a hobby and a piece of cake? Nope, that's not true. It's a lot of work, a lot of research, because, I mean, at least from our standpoint, we feel 100% responsible for every word that's in that book to make sure that to the best of our ability and our research and what we could get our hands on to read, it has to be accurate. You can't put out, you know, things that could hurt someone or, you know, make them worse if there is a collapse. Now, the premise of this book is that there is no medical facility for you to go to. There are no doctors or hospitals standing around waiting for you to arrive, and there's no ambulance or helicopter coming to rescue you. That's the premise of the book. This is not a self-help book. There are self-help books out there, but that's not what this is about. This is about what to do if no one else can help you. because we don't want people to practice medicine without a license. We don't want you to go pull out Johnny's tooth with a dental extractor because you think he has a cavity and you don't feel like going to the dentist. That's not what this book is about. And I don't want you to sew Susie's laceration on her arm because you're too lazy to go to the hospital. You know, take your children and your loved ones to the hospital, please. However, if no one else can do it, and you have to, this book provides what I feel to be sound advice, to be something you can open up, you can read, and within reason, again, you're not going to be able to do an appendectomy or a lobotomy or heart surgery, but you can take care of most issues that are possibly going to happen if we have, a devastating disaster or, a whole societal collapse. Hopefully none of that will happen. But that's what this resource is about. And it not only combines the traditional strategies that both Bones and I were taught in our medical school, but it teaches you what nature can provide. And that's what I think is very unique about this book. You have your first aid books, and then you have your natural remedy books. And what we tried to do was, within each chapter and issue, is provide the traditional, but also provide the natural. So as a prepper, you know that no matter what you're trying to take care of, no matter what issue, whether it be energy or gardening or whatnot, you need to have lots of options. So option A, option B, option C, option D, on and on, so that you have something that might be in your house or that you can obtain to help take care of that issue. You don't want to just be told, okay, you get a cut, you have to put Neosporin on it. There's nothing else in the world. If you don't have Neosporin, tough tooties. We wanted to give tons of options. And since, we know that there could be a possibility, there's no pharmacies producing medication, that we have to learn what's outside of our house. What's in my garden? What can I plant now to possibly go out and harvest and take care of something? So it moved beyond just traditional, and we wanted to teach people things that we knew back in the 1800s, the early 1900s before antibiotics were even, produced. There were things that people did do, and they got better. So you don't have to rely on pharmaceuticals if there's a collapse and you've run out of your medicines. Figure out what's out there. And that's what this book hopefully is going to lead people who may not even think about natural remedies as an option and open their eyes and say, gosh, I need to get some essential oils. I need to get these seeds and maybe start an herbal garden now so I can figure out what grows around my house or what is wild out where I live. What's out there? Dandelions grow everywhere. What are those good for? So I hope that it not only provides information to people who focus on traditional, but it also speaks to people who focus on natural, and it leads those two groups to look at the other side as options. So it's unique.
It's a fantastic book. Guys, it's 385 pages of information. The book's actually a little longer with the index and everything else. But, I was blessed and was given a copy of the book with both Joe's and Amy's signature, so when they become rich and famous and forget about us, I can say I knew them when. And here's the funny thing about it is, I could actually – I've got probably – 10 medical books up on my shelf right now.
Yeah.
And this is actually an easy-to-read, well-put-together book. I went from cover to cover, and it took me two days to go through it. It's not like reading stereo.
Yeah. And that's another big point, is there are really great medical books that we have here, Principles of Surgery, Atlas of Pelvis. I have, Family Medicine, Pelvic Anatomy and Gynecology. I have medical books, but I guarantee you guys would not be able to get through the first page. So what we wanted to do in this book is is make it readable. You know, what do all those words mean? There are normal words, I'll say layman's terms, to describe everything that has a medical term. And so that's what we try to do. And if we use the medical term, there is a glossary in the back that Bones put together. He also did the index, by the way. We self-published this because, first of all, we didn't want anyone else to have creative control over this. We had signed a deal after we put this book out, or as we were finishing it. A publisher found out that we were doing this and thought this was a great idea. They wanted to do the next edition. But, you know, after we signed the contract, they started sending us graphics changing the cover, changing the name. And I'm like, you know, forget this. I don't want anybody touching this. This is our baby. I want full responsibility for everything. If something's not right, they're going to come to me.
I need to interrupt for a second.
No, go ahead.
Well, we need to go to a commercial at the top of the hour. You know how that is.
See?
So we'll be back in 5 minutes, and we'll finish up with this.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Hey guys, you're back with Backwoods Home Magazine Self-Reliance Exposed. Guys, I'm
getting
a lot
of feedback. Yeah, we're getting a ton of feedback. But guess what? Well, I don't know. I can hear feedback on my end now, too. Anyway, I'm wide awake.
You guys actually sound fine to me. I'm not hearing
really
anything bad.
I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, yeah, I am wide awake now. I got my
internet on and finally woke up this last night, so I'm good to go.
Uh-oh. Scott doesn't sound so good.
Actually, that wasn't me. That was Ron.
Oh! It's Ron, okay.
Yeah, he went completely muffled. I think the feedback's coming from your side, Ron, because you went muffled for both of us right there.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, well, anyway, let's go ahead and continue with the show, guys. This is what's this is the great thing about live radio is you never know what you're going to get. So let's go ahead and keep going. So we were talking about the book, Amy, and I was saying that it's not like reading stereo instructions. And actually, the another thing that I found very interesting that is not in any of the other books that I have on my bookshelf. And guys, just so you guys know, when we talk about this stuff, this is our honest opinions. And if you've heard about some of the other books we've made comments on, you know, you can tell that we're really trying to be honest with this stuff. So just because we love Joe and Amy doesn't mean that we're trying to talk them up and everything else. But the book is I think one of my favorite things about the book is I can feel your personalities. you know, if anybody's ever met Dr. Bones, Amy's husband, you know, you'll find that he's got kind of a fun and quirky personality. you know, and he's always fun to be around. He cracks these little jokes and everything else. And he goes through here and you start reading and then he starts quoting Shakespeare. Not really, but, you know, close enough. It's probably about the same Shakespeare that I quoted after a couple of drinks in college when you're trying to quote and impress everybody. But,
right.
Yeah. And the photographs, you know, and Dr. Bones did some of the drawings inside here, and Nurse Amy did some of the photographs and everything else. And as you go page by page in this book, it's not like grabbing, you know, FM, you know, the field manual from the Army and trying to go through it where it's written for a third grader. And it's, like I said, it's like reading stereo instructions or, you know, some of the other medical books that they have out there. They really put their personality into this, which makes it interesting when you're going through it. You actually feel like you've got someone there and they're talking to you at your level. And I guess what I'm trying to say is it wasn't intimidating. Yeah, and I think that's important when you're trying to do something like this, I would assume, right, Amy? Is to write something that can get out to the masses and isn't intimidating for them.
Well, absolutely, because the idea of having to provide medical help without, you know, knowing without an emergency room down the street that you can go to is nerve-wracking. It's scary. It's you know, some people freeze, you know, like a deer in the headlights, like, you know, you're bleeding. Oh, my gosh. So it needed to be very easy to read, not intimidating, plain English. You need to be able to understand what we're saying to you in order to be able to do it if you have to. So that was the point. Again, and yeah, you guys don't even know half of it. My husband does not stop cracking jokes all day long. He is the funniest thing. But when he gets out in public, he tries to be, like, so serious. I'm like, honey, loosen up. He says, no. I'm a doctor. Everybody thinks I have to be, you know, like, serious. I'm like, no, but you're so funny. But then we put a drink into him, and this man never drinks. We put a drink into him, and how funny did he get?
Oh, yeah, it was hilarious. We were sitting around this table at Popular Mechanic, and, you know, each one of us had a couple of cocktails. And, well, except for Colorado Ron, he had a couple of drinks, I think iced tea or something. And, when I finally got up to my room, it was like, I thank God the other two were, you know, Joe and Amy were drinking with me, because I don't know which one of us made a bigger ass of themselves thinking we were so
funny.
I don't know.
We'll have to ask Ron, since he only had the iced tea.
And when I say ass, not in a bad form. It was just, we were just cracking so many jokes, and we thought we were so funny. It was having a good time. We were definitely having a good time.
We did, but, you know, it was nice for you guys to see him loosened up. You know, I fear that some people meet him and they, like, oh, he's so serious. And I'm like, you have no idea. He is hilarious. And
yeah.
I'm glad he's not listening, because he sings songs to me all day long, little ditties with my name in it and about the things we're doing. He's just so funny, seriously.
That's cute. So
that was a secret.
Okay, well, let me get to the last topic before we get going, because we're clear. Again, this is why I love having somebody like Amy on, because we could probably do the whole 3-hour show with just her.
Let me just say this. If you ever have an emergency, just call me up. I'm happy to help. You know that.
Yeah, I do, and that's an awesome thing to have as part of this. Now you're going to become. You know, you've done a couple different things. You started doing. Live training sessions where you actually teach suturing at our shows.
Yeah.
And you know, that's been going fantastic. And if any of you guys want to physically learn how to suture, I highly recommend you come to one of the four remaining shows and sign up for their classes. You can sign up on their website or on our Self-Reliance Expo website. That's been a huge success. But, you know, one of the other things that was in this book that I thought was interesting and has also been a big success for you, is on page, like, 63, 64, whatever, you guys talk about medical kits.
Oh, yeah.
And I will tell you, when I first got into this prepping, which is about 2 years ago, and, you know, we were talking about bug-out bags and medical kits and everything else, and my wife's family, we have two nurses, You know, her sister's head of the nursing staff over here at the local hospital, and her mom was before her. And even with that kind of experience there, when you look at putting together a your medical bag, your medical bug-out bag, it is the most ominous thing in the world.
It is.
You know, trying to figure out what the right things are. And so you and Joe, after the book, decided to put – you put this list together on page 64 of the things that you put in your kit, which is fantastic. And then you guys went ahead and created your own kits. And they've been doing very, very well.
Crazy well. Well, I think it's because, again, if you're not a medical professional, it's probably easier to figure out what food to have. Like, okay, you go to the grocery store every week. You pretty much know, you know, what food's all about. But most people don't think about medical supplies. It's not part of their normal daily routine. You may grab a Band-Aid here and there, throw some triple antibiotic ointment on, but it's not something that you have hands-on daily experience with. So you start reading, just starting with gauze. Do you know how many different gauze types there are? First of all, you've got your sizes. Then you've got your coatings. You know, some of them are nonstick. Some of them have Vaseline. Some of them are impregnated with silver products. I mean, and then you've got your sterile and your non-sterile. I mean, it goes on, and that's just the first thing that you need to have is gauze. So you've already moved into a realm of confusion just with the first thing on your list. So I spent months and months and months and months, what exactly do we need to have? What's unnecessary? What can you not have too much of, which would be gauze for sure? And trying to put together a logical list of things which would pretty much take care of most issues. And so that's what I did. And then, again, it moved into, okay, well, you've got all these things together. People started writing me, how do I get all this? I don't really want to research and figure all this out or purchase all these things separately. Can you put together some bags? So reluctantly, I moved into the world of Wally Mart. Is what I like to wake up in the morning and tell my husband I'm going to start going to work. I call myself Wally Mart. But I put together these bags because it's easier to just buy it and have it than to purchase. One of my bags has over 100 different items, which means if you bought them, you had to buy 100 different items. And so I put them together. I also put education with it. It's not just about, okay, here's a bunch of medical supplies. Each different kit within the family medical kit, which is my kitchen sink, has a laminated card. It is packed with those supplies on the laminated card. There's one for fractures and sprains. Well, in that bag is your flexible sand splint material, your triangular bandages, your arnica salve, your ice pack, etc., all within one bag with the laminated card, what to do, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, okay? You don't have to have the knowledge prior to someone spraining their ankle. It also has ACE bandages in it. But we tell you what to do because, again, some people get the deer in the headlights. So each of those kits has a laminated card. There's one on how to suture. There's one on the natural remedies, which, again, this is a unique thing. I took the concept of the book combining traditional and natural and did the same thing with this kit. It has raw honey, essential oils. It has tinctures. It has salves and on with natural alternatives to, say, even just an antiseptic. You can use raw honey instead or a lavender essential oil. So each of the cards explains what's in the bag, how to use it, and when to use it.
Now, so, you actually, and I was just going to say, and you guys have really gone way out there. I mean, you guys have your mini trauma bag, which is essentially your bag on the go.
Yes.
You have your family bag, which is
everything,
and made for multiple people. And I think the one I have is the
You have the kitchen sink bag.
Okay, yeah, and then you have the trauma bag with the with the medical bag, which is your, you know, mid-sized model. And then you guys also are putting up there, and I just saw it for the first time today, you guys are doing the complete kit for IVs.
Yes, I have IV kits I'm putting together. Which are for educational purposes only.
Of course. All this is for educational purposes until you need it, and then it's for, you know, it's for whatever you need it for.
It's practical. But the IV kit comes with a 500 bag of normal saline. It comes with the IV tubing. It comes with two 20-gauge, which, you know, may be a foreign term, but you can look it up. 20-gauge fits most people, adults. 18 is actually a larger catheter, believe it or not, in the French gauge. The lower the number, the bigger the catheter. Yeah. So I put the 20 in because that's good for women and men. And it's easier to put in. And it comes with an IV start kit. Now that kit comes with gloves, it comes with the tourniquet, it comes with a dressing and tape and a label, so you can write the date that it was and the time that it was placed. Again, this is all for practice, guys.
Right. Yeah, and I actually, when I was in the military, we used to practice. We actually did practice on a fairly regular basis before we went overseas. And this is one of those Bubba confessions that will probably come back to haunt me. You know, when I was younger, when I was in my early 20s, what was a kind of a standard operational procedure was we'd go out on a Friday and Saturday night and Sunday night and drink ourselves stupid. And then Monday morning, you had to get up for PT. So we would all keep saline bags in our little refrigerators in our barracks. And we'd go ahead and we would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and practice, quote unquote, you know, giving ourselves IVs with saline solution to wash all the alcohol out so we could go and run our 5 miles for PT.
Wow.
And you know something? I'm sure military guys still do it today because we learned it from the old timers who were Vietnam vets about, you know, popping in the saline, you know, get you sober for your show. So
it's a pearl of wisdom that's been passed down from military generation to military generation, probably.
That's right.
My dad probably did it when he was in the Air Force. I'll have to ask him about it.
Okay. Hey, well, I want to cover one last thing because we got to get going here. You know, hopefully we can talk again here real soon. Hey, did we ever get Colorado back?
I don't know.
Ron? I guess not.
I asked him to call back.
Okay. Well, we'll keep going.
Okay. I just want to say one more thing about the class.
Sure.
The featuring class that we're doing, May 18th is Friday at noon. May 19th is Saturday, and that class will be at 3 p.m. The class is about 90 minutes. We do a PowerPoint presentation of not only are you learning how to suture, but it's all about wound care and assessment. And a big point is when not to suture versus when to suture. And so we provide and teach you all the options that you should try to use first before you have to suture. And suturing is not something you want to jump on first. So I just want to make sure that everyone knows that we're educating all of the reasons why you should not suture and how to take care of the wound after. And then we do the pig's feet, and each person gets to practice suturing. We walk around and just make sure it's all going properly.
Awesome. And, guys, I haven't had a chance to do it. I know Colorado Ron's wife did. She said it was fantastic. Is that right, Ron?
It was awesome. She did so well.
So I highly recommend it. She says I thought he was back, but for some reason he's not coming up. The last thing I want to mention before we let you go, Amy, and thank you very much for being on, is, and it was part of the reason for you coming on, and we didn't mention it, you are going to be part of our Women of Prepping panel on the 19th of May.
Yeah, Saturday with some wonderful, wonderful women of prepping. I'm really excited. It's gonna be fun to meet all of them. I do know Lisa, the survival mom, already, but I don't think I've met anyone else. And so it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very excited about it.
Well, great. And so, guys, what we'll be doing is on May 19th, which is Saturday, from, yeah, I don't remember the times, but anyway, we will have
11 to 1.
We'll have Lisa Bedford. We'll have Amy Alton, Nurse Amy. We will have Patrice Lewis. We will have Jackie Clay and Kelly and Bishop all up on stage, all talking about different topics. We are going to try to broadcast it live. It is going to be probably one of the coolest and most fantastic shows that we have done so far. We're very blessed to have these fantastically knowledgeable women up on stage. And we'll get to see the new Amy Alton because she'll have finished her diet. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
And we're looking forward to that.
I'm sticking to it. Oh, one more thing. I keep saying that. If you're going to sign, if you, anyone who wants to sign up for the suturing / wound care class, email me at dr, that's for doctor, drbones, class, class, at aol.com. Dr. Bones class at AOL.com. I'll give you information. You just tell me which day you want. That's great. We'll get you signed up.
Okay, so that's Dr. Bones class at AOL.com.
That's correct.
We'll cover that again at the end of the show and make sure it gets out there, and we'll post it up on Facebook again.
Okay.
All right. Well, this was Amy Alton. Thank you, Amy. We love you.
I love you guys. I hope Ron comes back. I've Skyped him a couple times and told him to call back.
You know, he's napping. He's not going to admit it. He fell asleep, and I'll have to carry the show by myself.
Oh, no. Are you serious?
No. I'm sure he's probably trying to call back in and can't get up there. So,
and he's listening to you say that right now, and he's freaking out.
That's all right. You got something? All right, well, you take care, Amy, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, guys. That was Amy Alton, Nurse Amy, from Doom and Bloom. They have a fantastic website. You can go to their website at doomandbloom.net. They do a radio show every week with us, and we'll go ahead and give you guys all that information at the end of the show so you can go ahead and either sign up for their classes or listen to their shows and things like that. They're wonderful people. Maybe one of these days we'll get Joe on too and talk. I am not quite sure what's happened to Colorado Ron. I think he bailed on us. But yeah, okay. Anyway, we are going to keep going. We have next one of our contributing authors from or writers for Backwoods Home Magazine. It's Charles Sanders. Charles, are you on? Charles? Okay, we aren't getting Charles either.
Hello.
There you are. Hey, Charles, how are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
So, sorry for all the technical difficulties today. For some reason, Blog Talk is just not treating us well today.
That's all right. We'll get through it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think whenever I start the morning by insulting their technical issues, then all of a sudden they seem to escalate. So, I also appreciate you coming on last minute. We let you know on Monday that we needed to go ahead and have someone come on, and you were very nice and decided to pop on with us last second. So thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I appreciate it.
So, you've been writing for Backwoods Home Magazine. I was going through and looking at things and doing some of the research. You've been one of our writers since issue 45. I mean, you've been doing this way back. That would be like 1997 or something.
Well, actually, I was looking here. I see back in issue 19, I had two articles appear, and I think those were my first two back in 1992.
Oh, wow.
And I have had a few since that time, and then up off and on from then until now, yes.
So let me ask you, I read your bio, and we posted it up on the Internet and everything else. You know, how did you get into prepping? I mean, and actually, you don't use the word prepping in a lot of your stuff. You guys use homesteading.
Right. Prepping, thanks to some of the modern TV programs, is sort of almost taken on a negative connotation. To me, it's more something our parents did, our grandparents did, and it was just simply laying stores by for harder times. You know, they grew up. My folks and grandparents lived through the Depression, and they put up food. They preserve things to help get them through the lean times. And that's just, I feel like, a thing that all people should be doing.
And I mean, did you grow up with this environment? Did you grow up in the environment where people are doing this around you? Or did you just at some point come to some realization?
Both, a little bit of both. Naturally, as I said, my parents and grandparents lived the lifestyle. I learned it quite a bit from them. They did some canning and putting up things. Various family members, they did different aspects of it to some extent, whether it was chickens or butchering hogs or whatever. And I had, like I said, various influences. As I grew up, of course, I kind of got away from it, practicing it so much in my younger years, you know, with a young lifestyle, getting a job and that kind of thing. But it was always there in my mind, and I always was interested in it and practiced it all I could and have developed on it as I purchased my own property and went from there.
Right. And then I, when you said that, or I guess what I was trying to get to, because, like, I have the influences around me when we did it, and that's kind of some of the pretense of this show, is but you know, for some reason decided to head the exact opposite direction, and it took me till I was almost 40 before I realized that these were the kind of basic skills I needed to have.
Right, right. Well, I can say, as a young fellow, you know, I was always into the hunting, fishing, trapping. I had the notions I was going to move to Canada or Alaska and have a log cabin and live in the wilderness, that kind of thing. But unfortunately, that's one of those things that didn't play out. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, anyway, that's how it panned out. But I've been blessed to have the place that I have and the family that I have. And it's just, it's all, to me, a part of being good stewards of what the good Lord provides for us.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Now, you and your wife live in southern Indiana now, correct?
Correct, sir.
And from reading things, I mean, you kind of built a real nice homestead spread there. Do you mind if I ask how much property you guys have that you guys have done your homestead on?
Well, we have currently, we live in an adjacent county. We've moved from that place. I still keep some of the acreage over there. But we started out with right at 40 acres, which I had purchased back in 1977. It was all pastures and woodland and had an old house on it with a dug well, and it was pretty crude. I was single at the time, so that wasn't quite the issue as it would have been if I'd had a family, but it was pretty crude at the time.
And so, you know, that's awesome that you started off with 40 acres, because Colorado Ron, it looks like he's back on. You on, Colorado?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. So Charles, meet Colorado. Colorado, meet Charles. We didn't get to do the introductions earlier because he was having problems.
Greetings.
Sorry about that. I'm not sure. Nice to meet you finally. I've actually been reading your articles for quite a while. I apologize for the technical difficulties we're having today.
Well, that's okay. It's understand. I understand.
So, yeah, the last three shows we've been talking with some of the other writers for the magazine, like Jackie Clay and Patrice Lewis. And there's kind of a running theme here, which I think is very important for our audience to know, because I think a lot of our audience are young preppers. A lot of them are what we deem urban preppers, you know, people like Colorado Ron, who live in suburbia and are starting the prepping, but all have those dreams like you talked about running up to the hills and having your place that you can hunt and do all this other stuff. And what both ladies have said, and you kind of reconfirmed here a second ago, you don't need to go buy 200-400 acres or run out to a national forest in order to get started. You can do this with 20 or 40 acres and be fairly successful.
Oh, very much so. In fact, as I said, you know, we still have some acreage over in Martin County that I kept, and I use that for firewood and for hunting and that kind of thing. But right now I'm living on about an acre, and we have a nice garden. We got berries and some fruit trees out. And one thing that you mentioned is the young people. There's really seems to be a thirst for this type of knowledge among young folks. I see the folks I encounter in my job and in some part-time work that I do. For example, chickens. Folks are you never would expect are raising small chicken flocks and doing more to kind of get back to the basics.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny because it's funny you say that because both Bubba and I have started our chicken raising, and you know, I'm doing it in my backyard here in a neighborhood, and you know, he's doing it out there out in the woods or out in the sticks where he lives, and we've gotten so much interest, you know, at the expo, at the South, you know, we do the Southern Lights Expo, and so many people come up to us and want more information about raising chickens. I'm just amazed at the amount of people that are interested in raising chickens. It's crazy.
It's encouraging.
And hopefully, if you get a chance to listen in later, we're going to be talking about some of my chicken stories. So you might get a kick out of it if you get a chance to listen in after we talk about it. Because I'm one of those new chicken men. Yeah, I'm just getting into it myself.
Well, that's great. That's good to hear.
One of the questions I actually had a quick question for you. The you know, it seems like you're very well rounded. And one of the questions I had is, since there are so many new people coming into this, and we asked Jackie Clay the same thing, is, okay, say somebody's just getting married or just deciding to get into prepping and get their homestead, you know, what type of place would you recommend for a first-timer getting into this?
Oh, my.
I mean, should they do it in the back of the neighborhood, or should they do it in the neighborhood? Should they go ahead and try and look for an acre? Is an acre plenty? 5 acres, 10 acres, 40 acres.
It depends. Oh, there's a lot of factors there. I talk about that in my book, The Self-Reliant Homestead, as one of the first section is actually locating your place, and there's so many variables involved of where they are currently at, where they would be comfortable living if they want to move to a different part of the country or just simply away from the population center that they're in now. It depends on what they want to raise in the way of livestock. Obviously, if you're raising a feeder steer or two, it's going to take more acreage than if you're raising rabbits and chickens and maybe a goat or two. So it depends on the personal preferences of the person that's doing it, on the land requirements. Although we like to stay or we like to locate away from a population center, most of us, I would guess, would like to have some of those amenities available. So we like to be within an hour or even 2 hours of a larger population center for the conveniences that they have. So there are just so many variables involved. And once you do decide the basics of where you might like to be, when you narrow that down to a tract of land or a neighborhood or something like that, you have to take into account topography, everything from drainage of water to even air drainage for particular purposes. So there's a lot of factors involved.
Well, yeah, and I agree. I mean, there's really... It all comes down to personal preference and how at least I think it comes down to personal preference and how deep people want to get into this lifestyle. There's several different ways you can do it, and that's actually one of the things that we brought up is people can live a fairly sustainable lifestyle in a neighborhood or on a half acre or an acre or 5 acres.
Yes.
It just depends on what you're wanting and what you're willing to deal, you know. For instance, you know, here's a prime example. If you're going to be a vegetarian, you don't need, 50 acres to raise cattle. So,
right.
You know,
and
it doesn't make sense.
Folks should remember, too, that anything that they're doing, whether it's a small flock of chickens or a fruit patch or a vegetable garden, that's helping. I mean, that's helping reduce their dependence on other people, helping them to become more self-reliant and more knowledgeable and more comfortable in that lifestyle. And it helps to create that feeling of independence and the fact that they can do for themselves. And so any part of that, as much as they care to do, that's a big benefit.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Rob. I was going to say, what do you find the issues are with doing like small properties? Do you find problems with codes and things like that with, you know, being on a 1 acre piece of property, and because it seems like there's, as a general rule in most states and most counties, they give a lot more leniency the more land you have for doing different things. At least that's what we were hearing that from a lot of our people on Facebook.
And I would have a tendency to agree with that. I know that, but for residential areas, for residences overall, though, I think the regulations are becoming more stringent or becoming more picky about, say, how you set up a septic system and the type of water supply and different aspects. And I'm not, you know, whether that's good or bad, I won't comment on that, but I do know that that is a problem that you can run into. You just simply can't go in, and even though you know someone or know how to put in a septic system yourself that will be perfectly functional and can do it properly, you have to jump through the hoops of a permit system that a particular county or municipality has in place. So that and that is oftentimes the case on a smaller tract of land. Simply because you may have more people in a concentrated area, and they do have the authorities, I guess, do have the responsibility of making sure that there's not a lot of poor functioning septic systems, for example, in an area, or there's not, you know, certain aspects of it that affect a larger group of people than what if you were in a remote area.
Now, just want to make sure our listeners know, this is our first time meeting Mr. Sanders. May I call you,
yes.
Charles?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. You know, this is our first time meeting Charles, and, you know, like we said, we've both, Colorado Ron and I, have, you know, went through and read his articles and everything else, and which we'll cover those here in a few minutes. But so when we make these, when we talk about these, this is really kind of a sitting down and getting to know each other sort of environment. So we kind of have,
yes,
to feel each other out. This isn't pre-planned.
Right. So you know, forgive me if I ramble or run off on a tangent or something, and feel free to get me right back where you need me, okay?
No. This is, yeah, like when I emailed you, what we like about the show and why our show seems to be growing is people say that they respect that it really is like a bunch of people just sitting around talking on topics and seeing where they go. Because
yes,
that's where you really learn. If it's too pre-planned, yeah, you're really not getting what people really think. At least that's our opinion. So on that theme, I have a question for you, Charles.
Yes, sir.
You
know, yes, sir.
You've been a conservation officer for 36 years, correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, I have to ask what you think about some of these rules and regulations, because you're on both sides of the fence. In my personal opinion, most of the people who get into the homesteading, self-reliance, survival, prepping, you can use whatever acronym or whatever you want to call, you know, for the term.
Mm-hmm.
Most people get into this because they want to get back to basics. They are trying to do things the way they think are right, you know, whether it's eating healthier, getting away from the GMO, you know, trying to, you know, to get away from, you know, less government and more personal control on things. And you're on the opposite side, which is enforcing federal regulations that are handed down for the environment. And do you find sometimes that some of the things that pop up, that the new laws that they're passing, for like in for example in Colorado, you can no longer capture water. You can't have wells, you can't have cisterns, and you're not allowed to capture rainwater.
Wow.
And that's actually happening in a lot of states. It's passing in a lot of states right now. I mean, when you run into things like that, I mean, how do you feel being the person that has to enforce a lot of things that pop up? Whatever direction the wind blows with the government, and being a prepper, how do you deal with that on a regular basis?
First off, I just I don't want to get into too much about my job, but I will say that obviously, since I work in natural resources protection, I have that strong affinity, that strong attraction to the natural world, the wildlife resources and such as that. However, in my job, I also encourage we work for the sportsmen and the outdoor users of our state, and we support them, and we, as I say, promote the wise use, the conservation, the taking of wildlife, but doing it in a responsible manner, the utilizing of our timber resources in a responsible manner. And we you know, there's times we may not agree with something that, that is done, but, you know, I'm in a position where, you know, we can hopefully influence folks to understand why some of the laws that, that are written are in place, the basic conservation laws that we have. And, you know, I don't really know how to address it other than that. We encourage the wise use of the resources. We don't want people not to get out there and enjoy the resources and to take a nice buck deer or take their limit of crappie or whatever. But we want to do it in a way that the resource is there for their kids and their grandkids and on down the line.
Yeah, and I apologize if it sounded like I was going the other direction. No, I guess what I was looking at is that, you know, I agree with you that at least here in Iowa and in Texas, you know, most of the conservation comes from the people who access and use these things on a regular basis. I mean,
yes,
the hunters want to be responsible because no one wants to go the next year and not be able to hunt because you guys have killed everything, you know,
right,
and or poison the water and so now you can't go fishing, or cut down, you know, cut down green trees as opposed to dead lumber in areas that you are allowed to cut, therefore
mm-hmm.
causing all kinds of issues. But it seems like what we're seeing, at least in the states that I'm in or we look at now, we're seeing kind of a paradigm shift in some of the rules that not necessarily, you know, your organizations put out, but what local city and state governments are doing to kind of go the opposite direction, less education because the money is tight, or, you know, they're
yeah.
doing things for other reasons, which just seems counterproductive to what you guys have spent the last 10 years rebuilding. Because most people don't realize animal populations are at some of their highest because of the conservation programs that have been put in place.
Correct. That's correct.
And now
and
all of a sudden they're trying to cut them down.
To cut the populations down or the...
No. Cut the conservation programs. They're funding them less. They're, you know, they're going the other direction, it
yes.
seems
okay.
like. And that, I guess that's my concern.
Right, and, you know, it's just at my level, you know, in my position, that's we work hand in hand with sportsmen's groups. We work, you know, we're directly involved with folks every day, and by and large, we have a tremendous amount of support from the public who we help. You know, we try to get them to understand why we do what we do. And by and large, it's pretty well accepted. We run across someone now and then to get a little crossways with, but by and large, we're well accepted, and we try to, you know, as I say, we work for the public, and we try not to work against the public. So it works out. It really does. And I hope I'm not being too ambiguous in my answers, but
No. We kind of caught you off guard. We're not, you know. We try not to get into political things and things like that. But when we get someone that's official on like you, I always find it interesting to kind of get their feel, because we've had other people that have said, look, I mean, it's my job and we do what we're supposed to do. But, you know, it's kind of sad to see the government switch directions in this. Forget what the political group that is that has done it. But, you know, we like to kind of figure out where people who are actually living the lifestyle sit on some of this stuff. So
right. I think what you're getting at is perhaps the amount of regulation or over-regulation. And it's something that, you know, we share concerns with, too. And we, as I say, we work with the public. There's public input into the way the laws are created. And it is a... It's a fact that I know that in our state that they do take that into account when laws are proposed. You know, we've had laws, I can't think right off the top of my head, but we have had laws that or regulations that were proposed that were ended up not being enacted because the public got up and explained why they did not want it. And, you know, for that reason, it was a good enough explanation and a good enough argument to where the regulation wasn't enacted. So it's not a all us and... kind of thing. There is public input, and it's appreciated.
Very good.
That's cool. You know, I'd like to bring this back around, if you don't mind, and I want to get back into, you know, the homesteading aspect on this. And one of the things that you have talked about in the past was home greenhouse.
Yes, sir.
And I'd like to talk about that a little bit because I've actually considered building a greenhouse here in my backyard. And, you know, do you use it for all sorts of different things, or is it more like for your starts, or can you talk
ours,
a little bit about greenhouses as a possibility?
It was sort of I called it a glorified cold frame. It was made on the side of our garage, and it covered one of the windows, which I was able to keep wood heat in the garage, and a small fan kept it blowing into the greenhouse during the evenings. I didn't use it year-round, but I extended the growing season with it. I think one season we picked tomatoes. Oh, we were expecting a cold snap, and I picked the last tomato off the vine in the greenhouse on Christmas Eve one year, which is remarkable for southern Indiana.
Yeah, nice, yeah.
And we use it to, we could, in early January, we could get lettuce and spinach going in some old tires that I had in there, had them filled with soil, and we'd get lettuce and spinach going very early, and we'd get our plants started there. I had a heated germination table there where I'd get the seeds started, and we'd cup up the plants and have far many more plants than what we needed.
Now, is this one of the, did you build this from scratch, or is this one of the ones that you covered in the magazine where you kind of did it on your own, or is this something that you guys purchased?
It was built from scratch. I used some recycled electrical conduit. I built the base where I wanted it, and had the bent conduit coming off the upper side of the garage and arcing down, curving down and into a base about 12 foot from the garage wall, and then it was about 16 foot long. Used some recycled storm windows and storm doors in the ends of it, and covered it with some really good fabric that I get from, if you don't mind me mentioning the company, it's a little outfit out of North Dakota. It's called Northern Greenhouse Sales, and they have a woven poly fabric that is just fantastic for greenhouse use. And I've purchased from them two or three times over the years.
And this is the one. So this is the one that you did for, I think it was issue 67.
Yes.
Is the one we're talking about.
Correct.
Guys, if you have a chance to go, we'll post all these issues up on the website. It was a very interesting read. And I think he had a black and white photograph on it. Of the inside and everything else. One of the things I find that's interesting, Charles, about you is when you write these articles, you tend to give most of the instructions out there so people can kind of do it. It's very, you know, what we like to deem Bubba Da Vinci sort of method. You know, try to get the information out there so people can duplicate it.
Well, thank you. That's what I try to do.
and I guess my question is, you know, when you pick these projects up, do any of them ever seem daunting? I mean, I was reading going through the list yesterday, last night when I was trying to go through this, and you know, the one that caught my eye because I have to do something for my wife because she's just doing a garden was your homemade coffee cart.
Yes.
Which was, I think, what I thought was your first issue, which was a really old one, and I'm actually going to try to do this. Are you just naturally handy? Like Colorado Ron is naturally handy. I'm naturally all thumbs.
Well, yeah, I'm probably the proverbial jack of all trades and master of none. I like to, you know, I think I caught that from my dad. He was a tinker and had a lot of ideas, and he would try to create something from not much because basically we didn't have much money. And he would try to build things and maybe come in from the backside and try to get things done on a project. But I think I got a lot of that from him, his tinkering interest. I don't know about abilities, but sometimes I feel like I'm not as good as I should be on things. But that's one thing I try to stress in my writing and conversations with folks is that I'll give this advice particularly to new homesteaders or new backwoods folks. Don't let something intimidate you to where you don't try it. Jump in and try it. Make it the way you can do it. Make it the way you want it. It doesn't have to look like anybody else's in a magazine or a book. But make it yours, and you'll find out it'll work, and you'll gain confidence every time you complete a project.
I think that's good advice. I actually spent a lot of time reading your beekeeping basics.
Oh, good.
Because we just got chickens in. We talked about chickens earlier, and my next project is bees. I have a little over an acre that I'm putting clover and wildflowers in today, and our seed. And we want to go ahead and try to do a small beekeeping operation. And I when I was going through this, I was all excited last night to go ahead and give this a try. But I agree with you. I mean, as Colorado will probably tell you, I've made more mistakes than I've done things right, but I learn each time I do it.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is, you know, there's so many people that get so intimidated that they research. You know, and so I actually put a quote on my wall here to remind me, you know, to do is to know. And so you can research as much as you want, but until you actually do it, you know, oh, that's what he was talking about in the article. You know what I mean? So there's different things like that. So just get out there and get it done and just, you know, use these articles as a guide.
You bet.
But, you know, go out there and figure it out because that's the fastest way to learn. So.
And that's one thing I have to watch myself on is I can have a tendency to plan something to death before I actually get started on it, if I get started on it. So, you know, there's a lot of things on my project list that I haven't undertaken that I still need to get on to. But you're exactly right.
Go ahead, Colorado. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I was just going to say, do you pick your projects to write or do you write about your projects?
Oh, my. I'll tell you what, to be honest, very early on I had so many things going, it was easy to, I'll write about having done this, I'll write about having done that, and I guess I got to a point where I got kind of caught up, and then it was slower. I didn't really do a project just to write about it, but as I got more caught up on some things, I thought, well, I'll go ahead and do this one and write about it. So kind of both, I think you might say.
Because, I mean, we're Colorado Ron and I are just trying to do this show. And,
uh-huh.
You know, the natural inclination, I think, which we have to fight, and maybe it's the same way with prepping, is to go out there and try to create content. You know, and in the prepping community, to go out there and try to – you know, do the things that you read about in these books, because there's a zillion books out there all telling you about how to do it.
Yes.
And the more we talk to people like you, Charles, and Jackie and everything else, the more I think both Colorado Ron and I are realizing you don't need the books. I mean, it's nice to have them as reference,
mm-hmm.
but the only proper way to do this is to go out there and do what feels right for you and then just build it that way. And reading your stuff, that would have been my inclination. Was you're actually these are projects that you want to do, and then you write. But I was kind of, it would have been interesting to find out that you did it the other way.
And that, you know, that's like I said earlier, that's something I try to do in my writing is to encourage people to just do what you're interested in. You know, don't be afraid to try it. Don't be afraid to stumble. And I try to write in kind of a conversational tone, just where I'm talking with the reader, explaining things, and I hope that gets the message across to them in a good fashion.
Well, I definitely think that it. I'm sorry, I was just going to finish that up. I definitely think it makes it more appealing because I've got probably five books on my bookshelf getting ready about beekeeping. And yours was probably the simplest that made me actually want to go out there and get to do it because you didn't dictate here's why you want to do it and here's what you should do. It's just kind of like, you know, here's about six basic principles on where to start and things that you can look at. It wasn't too heavy. It was kind of, you know, it made it a lot better for me.
Good. I hope it helped.
Now, you are also a ham operator. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And How long have you been licensed amateur radio operator?
Oh, boy. I'd have to look. 10 or 12 years, probably.
Okay. And do you – I guess my question is on that one. That's one of those that I'm getting ready to get into myself.
Good.
Bubba's got his license on that one, but I do not. And I'm actually studying the Morse code right now. I know that you don't need it for the test, but I feel like I want it. So I'm been practicing on that pretty regular. But can you tell us just briefly? I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to wrap my head around this amateur radio thing, actually, and I can't quite figure it all out. But you know, I read stories and articles about people that can communicate with people on the other side of the globe and other countries and people that can communicate across, you know, states. How is that even possible?
Well, I'll be the first to tell you that, you know, I look at radios like I do computers. I compare it to a vehicle. In a vehicle, I don't mind knowing how to change the oil, but I don't really want to know how to rebuild an engine. I look at computers and radios like that. I want to know. I sought out the information I needed to do what I wanted to do with it. So when, you know, there's a lot of the technical stuff about radio that I am not real good with. I managed to pass the test and then put it into practice. But to briefly explain what you're talking about, the short wave works strictly on skip. From the old CB days, I don't know if any of you guys are old enough to remember that, but on a skip was when the radio waves would bounce, and sometimes you could talk across the country on the skip. That's the waves just bouncing off the ionosphere back to the Earth and back up and back down until they reach a location where they were received. And that's how shortwave works, and that's what makes it possible with a very minimal radio setup, very minimal antenna to talk around the world. I've spoken with stations in Antarctica, in Siberia, all over Western Europe, the Marshall Islands, and my antenna was a simple wire antenna that was strung between two trees.
Really?
Yes.
Oh. All right, now that's exciting for me. That's really interesting. I really want to get into this. So that over the next month, that's my goal. Is to be
well, I encourage you. I find it very enjoyable. I like to when I reach a station. I'm interested in what they're talking on the rig that they're using, but I like to find out what it's like there, where they're at. You know, what's the weather like? What's the land like? What it's like in their location. I find that very fascinating.
Oh, same here. That's cool. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. That's something I've always wanted to do. You know, I built my first crystal radio when I was a kid, and I've always been into that communication stuff, but I never actually got into the hams, and I don't know. I don't understand why I haven't. You know, that stuff fascinates me, so... maybe I'm afraid it'll take up too much of my time. I don't know.
It will for a while, believe me. My wife would echo that.
Well, Bubba, you've been into it for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been doing it for about 5 years, I guess. And
okay.
What I found was initially I was on the nets all the time. I mean, it was, you know, I'd get home and that's exactly what I'd want to do. I'd get on there and get on the local nets and find out what everybody was talking about. And then, you know, the problem with it is you can get, there's so many different directions you could go. I started doing the fox hunts, you know, which is, you know, going out there and you have someone with their radio and they broadcast and everybody tries to triangulate and find them. And I thought that was a lot of fun, racing around trying to find out where these guys were. And, you know, and then, you know, the more and more I got into it, you find, you know, all of a sudden you're using computers, and I started getting involved with the local hospital, you know, and setting up nets for them for emergency
yes.
nets. And we had a couple of huge storms in Texas that wiped out our communications for a week. We had a freeze and, you know, started blowing things. And next thing you know, we were on rotation at the hospital helping call things in. And
yes.
People don't realize until their cell phone towers go down and power goes out, how important it is to have a backup system.
You bet.
And then everybody loves you.
The ham radio system, the network will become a basic or the basic means of communication.
Yeah. And we need people, you know, the only thing I find, Charles, about the amateur radio is that we haven't found a way to make it cool. You know, we're fighting, and I think this is, it's amazing, I think it kind of ties into the prepping community. What what happens is that we're finding that a certain amount of people want to go back, but when it comes to the base communication, which is ham, you know, we're fighting the image of the iPad and the smartphone and everything else.
Yes.
And people don't realize how cool it actually is to be able to take something so small with a small antenna outside and bounce it off the ionosphere and be able to talk to someplace on the, you know, polar ice cap.
And unfortunately, you know, as long as folks don't realize how tenuous that connection is with the technology, with their iPhones and our even the phone that you and I are speaking on right now, and how quickly that can just in an instant be non-existent.
Yeah, I would agree. Hey, Charles, can you stay with us for 5 more minutes? We have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll keep talking with you if that's okay.
I'll be happy to.
Okay, great. All right, we're going to go ahead and go to commercial break, guys. We're going to be coming into our third hour. This will be brought to you by Humlis, our good friends with our silent power system. So we'll talk to you back in 2 minutes. Thank you.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humlis Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas! Which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humlis Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humlis Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humlis.com or on Facebook. Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine Self-Reliance Expo. This is Bubba Da Vinci. I'm here with Colorado Ron and our guest, Charles Sanders. Sorry, guys. I was just reading the Gray Boys. They were talking about chickens, and my daughters are gone now, so I can say we're getting them chickens tomorrow for Easter. You know, we need a couple more. And we're picking them up, someone said, it's great, it's free fertilizer, and I said, well, if you want free fertilizer, you should just listen to our show, because, yeah, we definitely pass it around. So anyway, thanks for coming back, Charles. We were talking about amateur radio here. Yeah, you know, we've been trying to persuade Colorado Ron to kind of get into it, and I think, you know, Colorado Ron's got one of those addicting personalities that I think that he's kind of hesitating a little bit, partially because he knows it, how fast he can get into it. But I think the second thing that makes him hesitate is, and hopefully you can dispel this, is the expense. You know, whenever Colorado Ron and I get into something, it seems like your first reaction is you start looking things up on the internet and everybody wants to sell you everything in $1 million. But that's not necessarily the case in ham radio. I mean, you really don't need a heck of a lot of gear or expensive gear to be able to talk to people just about anywhere.
Exactly. For example, a beginner, if you have an interest in amateur radio, you can begin on a local level with a 2-meter radio system. It's a mobile unit, or you can put it in a home with a power supply. that talks off of repeater systems locally on VHF frequencies. In fact, I have one, a very inexpensive model in my patrol vehicle, and I use it to monitor weather patterns that come through. The neighboring county has an outstanding bunch of storm trackers, weather watchers, and they keep everybody in the area informed on up to the second weather that comes through our area, and I frequently monitor them and pass that information on to my officers around the area. So that's a good place to start. It's a good just local communications within a county or two, you know, of a conversational type stuff. And that's a good area. You can pick up a radio like that for $100, $150, $200 on up, and an antenna will be $50 to $100. So you can get in pretty reasonably in a 2-meter rig. And that also uses a technician license, which is easier to get yet than a general class amateur radio license.
Mm-hmm.
Even with a general class license, the radio antenna I described to you was a simple dipole antenna, a wire antenna. The one end of it, I used an arrow, a bow and arrow, and a fishing line to get the one arrow at one end of it up into a tree, and was tied off to another tree on the other end, and it strung it into my house where I had my radio set up. That antenna runs about, I don't know what the current price is, but I'd say $80 to $100 easily.
Yeah, and I think
so. You don't have to buy a tower and a big boom antenna and go to a lot of expense. You can get out there on the air for a reasonable cost.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, we try to be educational here. I would also say that if you're interested in doing it, guys, go down to your local ham club. Almost every area has a ham club out there. And most of the guys, if you're, you know, as they get more and more into that, they go to more advanced equipment, and they're usually willing to sell you their used equipment at a pretty good price. And that's how I got into it, which was I was a little worried about what to get into, and there was about 50 guys at the local hand club, and they all said, well, I've got this, and I've got that, and yeah, I ended up finding one that seemed like everybody had, and I got it for about 50% of the cost.
And those guys are eager to get folks started, so they're going to give you information. And you know, if you tell them you're wanting to get in on a shoestring, wanting to learn the basics, they'll be tickled to death to help you.
Yeah, and you said something kind of interesting, and I think is important, is you carry one in your patrol car with you. And
yes.
You know, people don't realize that the national Weather Service and all these different groups actually really rely on ham radio operators that have their own systems and everything else to be their eyes and ears for potential tornadoes and storms and fires and things that happen. A lot of that information gets passed down from amateur radio operators. They carry the stuff in their equipment or in their car, or in their house, and can get that information and relay it out. Most of those organizations actually have ham operators, radio operators with nets that you can contact to get the information out quickly.
Yes, and as you described earlier, that's usually one of the first and foremost links of communication. Say, for example, in a disaster, tornado or a hurricane, something like that, it's the ham operators are oftentimes one of the main sources of contact. And in fact, most of the clubs have what they call field days. You're probably familiar with those, where you just go out and use a simple wire antenna and try to make all the radio contacts that you can. And it's sort of an exercise to see how quickly and how effectively that they can get a radio system up and working. And it's good practice for a natural disaster, for example.
Yeah, we were just in a tornado in Dallas. We were talking about that this morning, and I was just joking with Colorado Ron that, see, that would have been a good reason for him to have one in Dallas, as we could have reported when we were watching the thing swirl around in the air before it touched down.
Yes. Yeah, you guys got hit hard out there.
Yeah, it was a little nuts. But, you know, the other thing that I'm trying to figure out here is, you know, I have my house, and then I have my shop, and then I've got my vehicles. And if I get into this, do I get one for the vehicles? Do I get one for the shop? Do I get one for the house, in my office? Or do I get one for all three? And, you know, you can see how it starts getting more and more and more, you know. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out, should I do one in the vehicle? And then if I want to be on the ham, I got to sit in the vehicle. Or do I want one for the shop? And I'm always out in the shop and get in trouble with the wife because I'm always out in the shop.
Well, depending, you know, in my experience, for example, the 2-meter systems, if you live in an area that's reasonably close to a repeater tower, you can often hit them with a walkie-talkie, for example. That gives you, extreme mobility and portability. The 2-meter rig I keep in my vehicle, although you could, like I say, easily pop it out and hook it up to a power supply in the home. The HF rig, there are a lot of mobile models available, and as your level of experience and interest increases, you might want to have both a base and a mobile unit. I don't have a mobile HF rig, but that's certainly something that a lot of hams do wind up doing. So to answer your question, you can go. If I was just getting started in it, I'd probably go with a 2-meter mobile or a 2-meter portable, and that would be a good place to I guess, cut your teeth on amateur radio.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just looking those up right now, actually. There looks like quite a few selections out there. So,
now also,
I'll probably look at a portable. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you can get them with a little more. I don't know the power limits on the newer versions, but like I say, if you live in any area at all that has a repeater tower, I have one here within 5 or 6 miles of me. You should probably be able to hit it with a portable. And I'm also looking at an FCC, or excuse me, ARRL, which is the Amateur Radio Relay League. It's an organization for amateur radio operators. They have a database where you can ties in with the FCC, where you can look up ham radio operators in your area. You can just type in a city and state, and you can find all the ham operators in your area that you might be able to use as a resource.
Yeah, I think we actually at our events, we typically have the AARL out at our events, doing showing equipment and things like that. And actually, I've been fairly happy with the results. At the event, they've told us that it's definitely increased awareness and they've gotten people out and to sign up. The issue is keeping them in it, right? The people go to the event, go out there, and they take the classes, but I just keep thinking that we got to find a way to make it interesting for them, so that way they get involved. Because there's just I saw a report on AARL in one of the current magazines, I believe the last 3 issues, where they were throwing out a number, and I don't remember what it was, but it was something like 70% of people who are licensed don't actually participate after getting their license.
Yeah.
And that's an astronomical number, and that's a lot of lost information and stability for this country when things happen, because if you don't practice, it doesn't really work.
And that's the same with you talk about the getting people interested and keeping them interested with our iPhone internet instant communication society. We find that true in a lot of different things, even so far as homesteading. We even see it in our politics with what I call a sitcom attention span. People like to have everything, right now and quickly, and it's not something that always is conducive, to learning ham radio operation or homesteading skills, or regardless, it takes some time, some effort, and perseverance.
Yeah, I agree with you. And hopefully people will get more involved with it here in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is, if you don't mind me mentioning, the FCC also has a site where it will generate test, practice tests. Another one, if you Google amateur radio practice exams, I think you can probably come up with 2 or 3 sources for practice examinations that will help you become familiar with the testing for the ham license and some of the questions that will be asked. And those are always, I used those when I first got my ham license, and they were very helpful.
Yeah, very cool.
Nice. Yeah, real quick, I'd like to bounce back to your book. Yes. And wanted to talk with you a little bit about that. Can you tell us a little bit more information on that book? And obviously, you can order that. I'm almost positive through Backwoods Home. Is that correct?
That is correct. They do have it available. The book was first published in 2003. In fact, I've been working on some expanded chapters and more information in some of it. But it was first published in 2003, and the idea began as actually a compilation of some of the articles that I'd written for Backwoods Home. A lot of that basic information that I included and expanded upon to create some of the different chapters and sections in the book. And it's, you know, I tried to give a lot of resources for additional information. Obviously, in a book that size, it's not going to be a total complete manual, but my idea and my hope was, as we've been discussing, to get people interested, to get them to try it, to do it, to make it their own, and to give them some motivation, some ideas, some resources to where they could really create their own little place.
So, you know, it's I just posted the link up there, and unfortunately we're out of time, Charles, and this is the great thing about doing it this way is we kind of just kind of talk and everybody gets to know each other. I have a question to ask you.
Yes.
I'm doing I do on Friday nights at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, Bubba's Bookshelf, which is basically book reviews and talking with authors. Can I persuade you to come on April 21st? April 20th to talk about your book?
April 20th. I would be happy to speak with you more about it, communicate with you. I would need to check my calendar to let you know
wonderful.
For sure, but it sounds very nice, and I think I'd like to.
I actually just went online. Just so you guys know, it's www.backwoodshome.com, and click on books, and I just ordered the book right now so I can read it in case he says yes on the interview, and that way we can talk about your book and everything else. See, that's called staying ahead. So the internet is good for something, guys.
Great, yes, indeed.
and he just sold a book, so there you go. The name of the book is The Self-Reliant Homestead by Charles A. Sanders. And it's the book covers how to find suitable land, how to survive financially once you've moved, gardening, beekeeping, winemaking, which I wanted to get to, Charles, and maybe we can have you on again. I am fascinated about doing the winemaking. When I was a young boy, my grandfather, every single season, made wine. Yeah, we didn't have a vineyard. We had grapes growing in the back, and it was in the backyard, and it was just enough grapes. And then I remember him going out into the garage and making his wine, and we'd occasionally, you know, steal sips of the wine, you know, in between. And it's just a fond memory, and I think it would be very cool to be able to do so. I think
I'd
be
happy to talk with you more about it.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on our show. It was incredible. We appreciate
thank
you.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it. I appreciate the opportunity.
And hopefully I'll send you an email, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to you again about the book, and we can have you back on BHM's the show here sometime in the near future.
Very good.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank
you.
God bless you.
Got you too, sir. We are going to go to break. It will be a short one, and then when we come back, Colorado Rob and I will give you all the information on what's going on with the expos and catch you up on what happened in Dallas. So we'll talk to you after two commercials. Here we go.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hey, meat eaters! The freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwood Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. Are you there, Colorado?
I am here.
It was kind of funny. Yeah, you know something? Charles is a very interesting guy. I actually, one of the things I do like, you know, we were just chatting a little bit beforehand, and, you know, I appreciate everybody that stuck with us today, you know, with all the technical issues and things that popped up. You know, we're working diligently to make this a good show. But, you know, one of the things I did appreciate about today is being able to talk to Nurse Amy, and Charles in kind of a just open, free-form fashion. You know, it's not trying to plan out too much and everything else because, you know, I really do think that that's the way you get the most information is just really just talking to people and get what they think as opposed to allowing them to have preconceived answers to the questions.
Absolutely. You know, you've got to learn a lot more about Charles. I was shocked to hear some of the information that was available from him, and I'm excited to hear this book review now. So
yeah,
that'd be pretty interesting.
I have to apologize to Charles on air. I wasn't trying to draw you into a political conversation. It really kind of seemed like that. And I asked the question. I tried to find a way to kind of skirt around what I was trying to get to, and I was kind of I was kind of just thinking about it afterwards, and I go, man, it was probably looking, sounding like I was trying to put him on a spot and totally wasn't doing that. So I apologize if that's what it was. Our job here is not to be political or anything. We just we want to get the info. When you have somebody on the inside, you want as much as you can possibly get.
Absolutely.
So we talked about the tornadoes a little bit. And I'm going to kind of poke some fun at you if it's okay, Colorado.
I think
this will be good for us. I was checking out your Facebook, and you know, we were talking with Nurse Amy about the different medical kits that she had, and you know, I got lucky and I got to fly out the day after the storm because I was on Frontier Airlines, and.
Yep.
And Colorado Ron was unfortunately at American, and there's no dings on the airline. The issue was American Airlines hub is Dallas, Texas. That's where all their planes are. And they had over 160 planes damaged from the storm. And so they are way pushed back. Frontier Airlines, its hub is in, I believe, Colorado. And when the storm hit, most of their planes, they only had two planes on the ground. So all their planes came in late that night, and so they were able to have all flights go, you know, the next day. So I got lucky and got out, and Colorado Ron got stuck there two more days, almost three more days. And who did you fly out on?
Yeah, well, Well, yeah, I ended up flying out on Frontier because, you know, American Airlines pushed me back. They canceled my flight. They actually canceled me three times. And so they said, okay, so you're flying out on Friday. Well, I just happened to be looking online, and it says right here, 296 American Airlines flights canceled Friday. So I would have been stuck there. I'd still be in Dallas if I would have been waiting for American Airlines.
And he'd be live from La Quinta Hotel probably.
Oh man, I tell you what, that was so frustrating. But you know, for me, it was a perfect example of why we prepare. You know, when I travel, I try to be a minimalist. You know, Bubba knows this. I try to go with one bag and one bag only. My clothes are usually, you know, the quick drying clothes, so I can actually wash them in the hotel room and hang them up, and they're dry in 15, 20 minutes. I try to, carry in my bug out bag, I carry all the survival stuff that I'm allowed to take on a plane, but still be able to use like a water filter and all this other stuff. And I try to take all that with me. And luckily I had it with me.
There was what I was going to poke fun about, and here's exactly the topic. So, bug out bags. So, you know, it pops up on Facebook, and here's Colorado Ron saying, you know, thank God I have my bug out bag with me. And if you were to ask me, no, I mean, La Quinta is just a place you're staying, but you did have, you know, if you were to ask me. Colorado Ron doesn't have a bug-out bag. He's got a bug-out purse. I mean, this thing's about the size of a small briefcase. And I think this is the interesting topic because, you know, we've had several debates, and we get lots and lots of questions, and it's something that I want to hopefully address at our expo. And it was so lucky that it came up because in the current issue of Backwoods Home Magazine, issue number 134, the March-April edition, you know, they have an article on the grab-and-go bag, you know, which is kind of an interesting, you know, way to look at a bug-out bag. And I guess the topic is, what is a bug-out bag? And I guess it could be really anything. When Colorado Ron said, well, I'm lucky I had my bug-out bag, I was kind of scratching my head, and I go, he's got a purse. You know, it's a bag, it's a little dinky duffel bag that, you know, he's got his clothes in, and he's got just some basic stuff. And he does, don't get me wrong, guys, he does have some basic things, and he's right, for about as much as you could probably take on an airline, because he doesn't check a bag, he puts it on, you know, there. But I'm like, is that really a bug out bag? How long could you survive with that bag?
Do you want to know the truth? All right, I have researched this extensively, and I have tested this model out extensively. It will not be fun. I plan this all the way down to the shoes that I take with me, but I take everything in that bag is enough to get me home on foot if I had to.
Wow, that's a bold statement.
Yeah, it is. But I've actually tested it out. So I've walked from the Denver International Airport home before. I've hiked home, and I've used it, and I've camped out with it, and. So, yes, my bug-out bag, as small as it is enough. And no, it's not going to be comfort. It's not gonna, you know, I don't have a pop-up tent in the stupid thing or any of that stuff. But I have ways to make fire. I have ways to hunt. I have ways to grab food. I have ways to open cans.
How could you – I mean, you can't have a knife in there. So what would you use
to hunt? Normally I have a knife, but when I travel, I do not. So if an emergency did happen, there's two items I'd like to go and grab at the nearest store, and one of them would be a knife. So I would grab a knife, and I'd grab more food supplies. But if for some reason I couldn't, the knife is the one thing I'm missing because obviously you can't take it with you. But I usually have a Leatherman in that bug out bag with me at all times, unless I'm flying the airlines, and I pull it out and I sit it on my nightstand until I get back, and then it goes right back in the bag when I get back. So.
Right. And guys, this is, you know, this is not a dig on Colorado in any stretch of the imagination. It's, Yeah, this is one of those topics that always comes up. I mean, we get a lot of people that post on Facebook that will comment on the selfrelianceexpo.com, or we get a lot of it in the show. It's like, what should I have in my bug out bag? Or what is a go bag? Or what is a car kit? If you go to page 60 of the current Backwoods Home magazine, or you go check it out online, you know, they cover some of this and talking about, you know, what it is in its simplest form and things like that. But it was very interesting that we were actually in a situation that that we potentially needed. I mean, my go bag that I have when we got to Denver, I mean, when we got to Dallas, consisted of a laptop, a hard drive so I could make sure I could watch my movies, three power cords. I think I might have had a candy bar inside there, and I actually did have my Berkey Sport. So I guess I wouldn't go thirsty, and I might have been able to use my hard drive as a reflector or something. I mean, but you know, for living this lifestyle, you know, it's easy to, number one, have misnomers on what things are. So I think an interesting topic, Colorado, for the next maybe week or two is talking about what type of bug out bags are there. Maybe on the next two or three shows, we talk about some basic things that, you know, that you should have in there. Because, you know, when you made that statement, it was like, wow, you know something? It was not that, not making fun of you for what, you know, having your purse. As much as I didn't have anything. I mean, that was my first thought. It was like, he's got a purse. And then I was like, well, what did you have? And I was like, I had a Berkey bottle and a candy bar. Uh-oh. Yeah, that's not very good. So,
yeah, it sucks to be you.
Yeah, it would have sucked to be me if they didn't just went ahead and take me. You know, so I think that, you know, one thing that we should look at addressing, and maybe, again, at our expo, is, you know, what kind of bug out bags or what can you take physically on when you go on a plane or you're traveling? You know, it's obviously different than when you travel in a car. You know, you can take a lot more in a car. And I travel a lot, and I'm actually ashamed to say that, you know, if you know, it had really been bad over there, and it was bad for a lot of people, but it wasn't bad for us. It was just inconvenient. I would have been in pretty bad shape. Because I had absolutely nothing, and you know, good for Ron for actually having some stuff inside there that will allow him to, you know, get home. Although I might want to challenge you on that. You know, maybe we can do like Doomsday Preppers. We'll have like a panel of experts, and they can go, well, Ron, while you have planned ahead, you know, for an eventual disaster when you have taken a plane, you know, we do not believe you had enough to get home. Yeah. So anyway, and I actually play that guy. I think I could do that voice pretty well. It's not as bad as my English accent, but it was pretty bad.
You know, I would love to take that challenge actually, because the bug out bag, I think, is one of those things that everybody throws a YouTube video up on their bug out bag, and everybody's bug out bag is different for their needs. But I think some people put way too much stuff in there and don't rely on skills. They rely on equipment. You know, but some of the things I have in mind are, you know, like a compass and, you know, some of the basic stuff, some navigational maps and, you know, things like that. But, you know, I don't rely on a lot of equipment. You know, I feel like if I'm having to hike home, I can figure out how to, you know, figure out my own shelter on the way, so I don't have a tent in there, for instance, or anything like that. But, you know, I don't need to carry water. I just carry a filter, you know, those types of things. So,
right.
I think
it would be fun. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I think it would be fun. I think it would be a blast, you know. You know, people think, well, you know, you got to have food for 72 hours. Well, no, you don't really. I mean, you don't need to eat for 3 days. You don't have to. As long as you have water, you'll be fine. So, you know, although I do have plenty of food in my bug out bag, it's not something that's a necessity. So.
Right. Well, you know, I think would be, you know, and I don't know if we could, maybe we do this before a show one time or things like that. You're right. Everybody's got a YouTube video on. And talking about what they did. In my younger days, way younger, you know, with a family friend, we hiked part of the Pacific Rim Trail, which is a trail that goes from Mexico all the way up to Canada. And, you know, I spent a lot of time you know, there was like 12 of us that went on this trip. And, you know, we had the two extremes. We had people that packed everything in their mother, you know, because they were going to go out there and they were going to be comfortable. And then we had the people who were, to use your term, minimalist, and said, well, I'm going to do this. And I thought it was very, very funny, you know, to kind of see the different situations of where people ended up. Because all the people that had the creature comforts, yeah, at the end of the evening, they were the most comfortable and had a good night's rest, but they were also the ones that were the furthest behind and were struggling because of the weight on their back. And
yep.
The ones that were minimalists definitely moved faster than the rest of us and didn't have all the aches and pains when they got to the campsite that night. But when the rainstorms hit or whatever it was that ended up happening that night and they had to sleep out in the rain, they were not happy people. So.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So I think it'd be interesting to maybe invite a handful of these people that are trying to convince people what they should have in their bug out bags to a bug out bag event where we say, okay, here's the deal. You bring your bags that you described on your YouTube video and you have to get from, you know, point A to point B over a 24-hour period of time and see who's the most miserable, you know, when they get there and who actually and what was actually needed. Of course, I'll be the announcer, so I don't actually have to do it. But I think it would be interesting to see the rest of you suffer.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. You know, like I said, I test it out from time to time. You know, I've had my wife drop me off different places, and I just figure out a way to get home. You know, we've gone up to the mountains, like to Estes Park or something, and you know, have a good spend the day, you know, with the family, and then I'll just grab my bug out bag and say, all right, I'm gonna hike home. And that's like I said, it's to do is to know. So to figure it out is the best way. You know, one of the pictures that I didn't post on Facebook, and I should have, but I didn't get a very good picture of it. Is, you know, I hiked out to the Bass Pro Shop because I was so bored in the hotel. So I figured I'd test out my bug out bag, and I hiked out to the Bass Pro Shop. They're actually the same one that we visited earlier that in that trip. While there, I realized it was a long freaking way, and I didn't want to walk back. And so I was trying to figure out what to do. And I thought about, I was actually got on my phone. I was getting ready to call La Quinta and see if they'll have the shuttle come pick me up. And there was a guy in the parking lot right next door. There was a Whataburger, and his truck was broke down. He had the hood up. And so I walked over there and I negotiated a ride home with him. I told him, I said, I'll fix your truck, get your truck running. Can you give me a ride to La Quinta? And he said, yeah, absolutely. And all it was he had loose battery cables. So I cleaned off the battery cables, put them back on, truck started right up, and I got a free ride to La Quinta. So, you know, that's all part of it. You know, that's all bartering, and that's all part of, you know, whatever it takes to get home, right?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that was very clever, you know, to figure it out. And that's what you really have to be a lot of the times is the gear is important. If people ask me, I would say the two most important things is self-confidence. You know, being confident that you can get through the situation. And number two is just thinking. You know, the solutions aren't always, you know, the Rambo solutions. Sometimes they're not, you know, they're just, you know, being smart.
Yep, absolutely.
So anyway, let's touch base a little bit on the Dallas event. So we will be having, we've basically done this now. We will be working with Mercury One on creating a Self-Reliance Expo on July 27th and 28th in Dallas, Texas. It will be at the Arlington Convention Center, which is attached to the Sheraton Hotel in Arlington, Texas. And Arlington, for those of you guys who don't know, is kind of a burb of Dallas, Texas. So we say Dallas because most people know where that is. It's also the home of the Dallas Cowboys, Cowboys Stadium. And we're really excited. We will be taking over 26,000?
29, I think, yeah.
I'm sorry, you're 29. Right, 29,000 square feet. I'm doing an expo on Friday and Saturday, that's that 27th and 28th, during the Glenn Beck Restoring Love event. And, man, talk about exciting. Yeah, 100,000 people going there to see Mr. Beck speak, and then we'll be next door to provide additional entertainment for them. Great honor.
That's right. Yes. I'm so excited for this event. This is going to be an amazing event. I'm thrilled, and it's going to be exciting to be able to be there with Glenn Beck's people and see this. I don't even know what 100,000 people look like coming through the door. This is going to be pretty crazy to watch them come in for registration.
Right. Well, just so you guys understand, this is not a part. We are not under Glenn Beck's show. We're next door as a kind of a contributor. We're sponsoring the registration. We'll have a booth over in the registration area, and then it'll be promoted to come over to our show, because what's happening is he is having Restoring Love has volunteer things. They're going to be helping with Habitat of Humanity. They're going to be cleaning up rivers. They're going to be doing all kinds of things. And then each day they report back there, and our event, they have several different things going on for these people to participate in, and we are one of those. And they came, and we were, like I said, very honored that they came to us and asked us to put on an event so their people had something to go and do.
Yep.
So, wow, what an honor. Wow, what a great responsibility. Yeah, what did they say? With great power comes great responsibility. And obviously, the knowledge that we're creating is a great power, so now we have the great responsibility. So, hopefully you guys can join us. I mean, we're gonna be making announcements next week, starting next week, about what's going on with these events. And I just think it's just going to be the biggest thing that we've ever done today.
You know, it's going to be great. I can't wait. I cannot wait for this event. You know, and obviously May in Colorado Springs is going to be an amazing event as well. We've got we really ramped up the advertising on this one. Women in Prepping, which is the first thing we've ever done, a panel like that, first time that's ever been done. So, we're doing, every time we do an event, it's just something new that's never been done before. So, hopefully we don't have a flop, but we haven't had one yet. So,
along. My belief is, and I think we all agree with this, is if you're educating, there's no way you can fail. We're not, people go, oh, they're in it for the money. They're going commercial. This Glenn Beck thing definitely seems very commercial. But, if we only stay with the market, if we're only talking to the people who are currently prepping, then we're doing a disservice to not only the community that we say that we want to be in, but, to the general concept of it in general, because I was told that the concept of self-reliance and everything else is also making sure that you're helping train and take care of others, right?
Absolutely.
And this is a great way for us to get out there and use the power of something like, Restoring Love to get out to people who have probably thought about this but don't know where to get started. So, we are going to keep taking these opportunities to keep going and doing as much as we possibly can, like this radio show. And, for every one person that comes on and listens, that's one more person that we've gotten into the lifestyle. And if something ever does happen, it's one more person we can hopefully rely on. So, it's huge.
Yeah, exactly. And as we grow this and reach out to the new people and people that have never been into it, what I find most fascinating is watching I don't know if the light bulb is the right term, but you know what I'm saying. When you see it click and they're like, wow, let's do this. And they really get into it and they really jump into the lifestyle. Like we said, we don't promote the, into the the doom and gloom stuff.
We
really push it as being a lifestyle. Doom and gloom. We do.
Doom and gloom, we promote. Doom and gloom, we don't. Doom and gloom, I think, is on that other station. Oh, did I say that?
But
ouch.
You did. But it's about a lifestyle. So, whether the apocalypse happens or not, it's a lifestyle, and just knowing that you're prepared relieves so much stress, whether something happens or not. So, you know, and helping families and new families and young families and older families that never thought about it. You know, and, you know, we even did the interview with, you know, the guys over at Doomsday Prepper the other day. They're reaching a whole new audience of people that never even thought about prepping until they watched the show. And whether you agree with the show or not, it's still attracting an audience. It's still bringing people to this area, to this subject, and getting people to want to learn and making them want to research and find food storage and those types of things. And then that's how they find the Self-Reliance Expo. Then we pull them into the Self-Reliance Expo and they learn all these other activities. So it's great. I just love getting more and more people prepared.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, people say, well, why don't you talk about, you know, the end of the world scenario more and everything else? Although those are very interesting topics. You know, that's not what the Self-Reliance is really about or what we're trying to do. For the simple reason, you know, if the world's going to end, you know, why prepare, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense. End of the world means it's done. You know, we can kind of let apocalypse doesn't even necessarily, that doesn't mean what it means. It's apocalypse means, you know, revelation. It's a revelation or a prophecy, you know. So training, worrying about the apocalypse, okay, we can maybe go that direction. If we definitely don't want to be a show about the end of the world because, man, is that boring when it's over. You know, we don't have any more topics anymore. You know, but it's actually kind of funny because some of the people who listen to us are probably going, God, I hope the end of the world's coming then. But
listen to us anymore. Totally.
Yeah, but anyway, guys, we're happy to be doing this. That means we have four shows for this year. Let me just run through them again. May 18th, 19th, Colorado Springs. Now July 27th, 28th, Dallas, Texas with Restoring Love. September 14th, 15th in Hickory, North Carolina. And October 26th and 27th in Mesa, Arizona. We're blessed to be able to have four more opportunities to help train people and get people educated. And whatever we can do, we're happy to do it. So one last other exciting thing that I want to make sure we cover, talking about getting ready and training and moving up. And, you know, I said moving on up, and I started thinking that George Jefferson song, moving on up. Guys, I apologize. I started singing. I take that back. Cutting it. Done.
Don't ever do that again.
I know. I heard dogs screaming outside. So we will be launching our new website in about 10 days or less.
Yes.
And here's the important thing about this, guys. We are going to try to get you guys away from Blog Talk Radio. We have now created a home that we are proud that we're going to be launching. Each one of our radio hosts will have a home page that they can go to with. So when you're listening to their show, you can see the graphics, you can see the sponsors who are doing it, you can read the bios. We'll have replays on there. Yeah, we're taking a step forward and really trying to escalate the knowledge base for you guys. And we'll have new forums up there and everything else. We'll have our own store. And, you know, what we want to do is make it easier to promote our shows, to promote our hosts, and for you guys to find the information. This was a huge investment by our company to do this, but every show that we do, we talked to Nurse Amy to get earlier, and we were saying how successful they're doing, and some of our other people, our other show hosts are actually getting out there. We believe a lot of these people are superstars, and even if they aren't rock stars to the rest of the world, they're rock stars to us, and they're great resources for information, just like Charles today. And those are the people we need to get to you. We need to get the people who are eating it, living it, breathing it, And so you can hear what's going on and how easy it is to participate. Would you agree with that, Colorado?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, that and that's what it's all about. So I just love meeting people like Charles, like today. You know, I've never talked to Charles until today. You know, pulling that information out of them and sharing it with everybody is just, it's a blast. I love it.
Yeah. All right. So I think we are. I think we're done here today. Let us thank our two guests. We had Charles Sanders, who is a real life homesteader and a contributing author to Backwoods Home Magazine, And we had Amy Alton from Bloom. God bless you, Amy. We love you guys, and we appreciate both you guys being on. And who are our two, our three sponsors, Colorado?
Let's see. We have Humless.
Right.
Awesome, awesome product. We love Humless. Humless is the silent portable generator. You can get those. Actually, you can get those with the solar panel. Matter of fact, I was going to work on that today, is mounting another solar panel on my roof of my shop to keep my Humless going, keep it charged. And then we have Interfood,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome product. Love Interfood.
Yeah.
That's actually what gets me going in the morning, wakes me up.
Starting to sound like an e-commerce.
I know. It's terrible. And then our third is Sun Ovens.
Yeah.
So
we want to thank all three of them.
Sun Ovens is a great product.
Yeah, we want to thank all three of them for coming up and participating. And we will have more announcements with Glenn Beck with the Restoring Love. We'll be doing more announcements with them over the next couple of weeks to kind of really kick this off and get it going. We want to thank our main sponsor, Backwoods Home Magazine, www.backwoodshome.com, backwoods, plural, home.com. Check us out at selfrelianceexpo.com. And you, as always, you can hit us up on Facebook for any of the four. We got Backwoods Home Mag, Preparedness Radio, Self-Reliance Expo. Any of those three, you can join. Oh, and we just found out Vicki Lynn is the special guest for Doc Bones and Nurse Amy. So please join them tonight on their show. You can go and sign up for the suturing classes at Dr. Bones Class, CLASS, at AOL.com. Get a real URL, AOL. Come on. Anyway, got to tease them a little bit. Yeah, please, if you want a medical book, we put it up there. Go to doomandbloom.net, and you can get the Survival Medical Handbook. Fantastic book. Highly recommended. Get it, live it, breathe it. Make sure it's in your bag, your bug-out bag. I actually probably wouldn't fit in your purse, would it, Colorado? It's almost as big as your bag. Today was actually pick on Ron Day instead of pick on Bubba. I like it. That's right. All right. So definitely go to Backwoods Home and pick up The Self-Reliant Homestead by Charles A. Sanders. That's a great book. That's www.backwoodshome.com. Click on the book section on the right, left-hand nav, and you can pick up that book. I just ordered mine today so we can sit there and read it together. Okay, one last second. We're going to be cutting away here in 3 minutes, so I wanted to take this last second to give you guys my chicken updates. I was talking about them earlier. So, we actually have been getting 3 eggs a day from our 3 chickens. And 3 eggs a day. So each chicken's been producing like an egg a day. It's amazing.
That's amazing.
And so, but the first lesson I learned, and I'm going to leave you guys with this, and this is the knowledge base that we are passing on. So the first day I get my chickens and I cut them loose in my yard into the chicken yard that we created with the chicken coop, no one told me that there was such a thing about homing your chickens. And I've read the magazines and everything else. And so here it is. It's starting to get dark. And I know I have to get the chickens indoors because we have mink and fox and raccoons and everything to get this stuff done. And I put my chickens, and I'll shoot a picture today, around these 3 bushes that have thorns on them so that way they could hide in there from birds and everything else if they have to get away from something. And well, little did I know about homing, and so I ended up having them hide in there from me. So my wife and I spent almost 45 minutes chasing chickens around the yard, trying to get them to go into this new roost, into this new chicken house, because they didn't want to go in there. And I came out all cut up. And then we come inside, and she looks up on the internet, and she goes, "You know what a homing a chicken is?" And I said, "No." We found out we were supposed to leave them in there for several days. And these are the experiences. These are the times and lives we lead. When a man who is educated and has actually does corporate work is cut up and looking like an idiot for chasing chickens around his yard, and it looked like a bad Abbott Costello movie. let me tell you, me falling in the dirt, tripping, and having the chickens go six different directions. And it was like, finally got him in there, and I was like, I'm done. I don't want chickens anymore. Then we read that. We opened, 3 days later, she opened the door. Sun starts going down. We open it. They march right on in and go inside, and we close the door. And I'm like, wow, what an idiot. So I'm sending a complaint to the chicken guy on his radio show because he never said anything about doing chickens or homing chickens. And I'm writing Mother Earth News because it wasn't in their magazine either. So I'm telling you. All right. So from Bubba the Chicken Wrangler, that's the end of our show. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll talk to you guys next Saturday, 7 a.m. Everybody have a blessed Easter weekend. So
take care, everybody.
All right, guys.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com. That's preppers@sunoven.com. Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's enerfood.com, enerfood.com.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.